Wall Street and biotechnology companies have been very excited about this idea. And what essentially it is trying to pack the cells in the body in order to make them into drug factories.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Thursday, March 25th, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. I've got quite a big show for you today. Could be long, depending on how much time I take on certain topics, as usual, but there's a lot to get into today that's very important. And yes, I promised I would, and I'm going to start with the nanotechnology topic. And weirdly enough, it was almost meant to be done today with what I'm going to be covering along with this. Very, very alarming stuff that, as you saw in the title, again, in a very, very clear way ties into the eugenics element to all of this, including showing us how these biomarkers are being discussed in the multiple documents discussing how we're going to be altering evolution with nanotechnology, how we're going to be converging all these technologies, governments and organizations, people like Bob Langer, in fact, involved in writing these papers, deciding what we're going to be doing all the way up in 2020. And somehow none of us seemed to know this was coming. And now they're saying, oh, this is just happening because of COVID. But no, they planned it a long time ago, whether that was because COVID was the catalyst they chose to use or maybe more than that. Right? We shouldn't put past the possibility that things were put into motion just as they have been in the past. But I'm not saying that's a fact. The point is that we can see the clear paperwork, the groundwork for leading to where we are right now. And as I said, there's a very striking and alarming eugenics part to all of this. We're also going to go over a bunch of very interesting things kind of intermittent throughout all of this, including the mask discussion again, but in regard to these new, very insulting, like just dumb, very stupid looking nose masks, which just make no sense in regard to the logic of even why the masks, they work, so they claim, and we know that they don't in regard to how they say they do. If you're interested in that, I've done a whole bunch of shows on the overall the science and the evidence around the mask discussion, including what they're claiming. I'm not talking about that in depth today. Also going to talk about a very interesting topic that stems back to the interview and the discussion I had with Christian Westbrook from Ice Age Farmer. In regard to this, it's kind of a multi-topic discussion, but specifically what triggered my interest was the Suez Canal event that's happening right now with this ship that got wedged randomly and seems to be holding up all this stuff. But there's a lot more around this story that I find very telling and very interesting, which I'm sure you will as well. And we'll get into that and how it ties into the infrastructure and how it's being used and possibly was allowed or made to happen. These are always things we should be asking, as well as a very telling story that Whitney Webb shared with me about the national health system in the UK and how, especially in this case, a specific hospital that I'll show you examples of how they were overrun and all these things were happening. And guess what? When actually put to the test and a FOIA request was sent, it turns out that they're telling us that that's not the case. We seem to be going forward regardless of these contradictions, which you'll find in every single aspect of this entire discussion, including lockdowns. Great article by Off Guardian we're going to talk about, as well as a few other things, a compilation by Ivor Cummings, and the lockdown discussion should be over, especially since the World Health Organization continues to tell us that that's not what we should be doing. And they tell us we can't counter the World Health Organization guidelines, but then they all go and continue lockdowns because that totally makes sense. As well as a few other topics we're going to get in here. One about this very unnerving video of apparently what's been going on sort of because COVID, but not just COVID, but because of the new we're all disease carrying animals idea, which is sort of true, but not the way that they're making it into this pandemonium about how we can't do anything that puts us at risk anymore, but about how they have a baby that's being born behind a plastic sheet. And the idea about how alarming that really is, not even in regard to COVID. But we'll get into a lot of this stuff today. To start off, I wanted to make a couple quick comments about a few different things. One first was something that Whitney shared, but then a bunch of sort of their political, you probably noticed I've taken to sort of doing this lately. the basically kind of going over some of these kind of random intermittent points that aren't really connected to the larger discussion, but are very relevant though. Sort of like notes from the ether, as I was saying, or different ways you can look at it. But they do today in an interesting way tie in. But a lot of this discussion around Biden, and one that will lead into the discussion of glyphosate, which was a huge discussion we're going to start off with today that will and does connect with the nanotechnology discussion. You'll see why. But first, Whitney Webb points this out today, and she just reached out and we discussed having a show probably next week together where we're going to go over this because we talked about this already. She says, myself and T-Lav, or You're All Dunces, if you recognize by now that that is my Twitter account, which was never really even intended to be a public account. It was only so I could continue to engage on Twitter, and they deleted everything else. So what do you know? Told you this was coming last October, and now it is here. A bill has been introduced in the Senate to allow the DHS, the DOJ, and the FBI to monitor and analyze U.S. internet activity and use it for pre-crime to, quote, prevent domestic terrorism. As somebody was just pointing out, there are people being arrested in regard to January 6th on all sides. Antifa this or QAnon that, and it's everywhere. So as usual, it's about you, not one side or the other, not left or right, but you as an American. You are something that concerns them quite a bit. If you even care about your rights or your freedom or having autonomy, any of those things, how dare you? So now they're focusing on you. You're a domestic terrorist. We'll talk about this more. It's coming your way soon. Now, to get into the really, you know, points from around the world, I just had to share this because it's really, this has been an ongoing thing that's been happening quite a bit, at least since I've been doing this, for, you know, however long I've been doing this in regard to reporting, researching. There's this thing that politicians do where they stand up and take responsibility for something that was in obviously their responsibility, which doesn't make sense, or sort of stepping down from a position when it's something when they get caught for a crime and that's supposed to be enough. No, they should go to jail. Stepping down, you don't get to quit your job when you get caught for, robbing a store. You go, okay, well, I'll quit my job. Is that cool? Do I get out of jail? No. But when you're in the elitist circles, that's supposed to be enough. But as Merkel basically we talked about the fact that Germany was going to do the largest, most intense lockdown they've ever done based on the possibility that something may be happening. Understand how important that is. Not because, oh my gosh, this is happening and it's rising and this is all through the roof. Even if they were saying cases were rising, we know that that's not what the numbers show and the information around the PCR test and everything else shows that's not something to be taken at face value. But they use it that way. That's not what this is. This is a new variant seems to be heading our way. So we're going to lock down in case that might be more dangerous and in case it might affect us. That's incredible. Knowing how alarming it is that we have so many examples of why lockdowns are damaging, again, which we'll get into later in the show. But she gets so much pushback from Germany, from the people of Germany, that she stops it, which needs to show us, one, that we are breaking through to the average people, and two, that if we actually care to look beyond our two-party illusion, we can make things happen. That's the most important point that I've been drilling in for 20 years. It is time that we look past the illusion, the two-party illusionists out there who are continuing to engage in this, even when they know it's not really as honest as when they know it's a fallacy. They do it because it's benefiting them, because they have investment in the partisan politics. We need to stop that. And as I said, as Merkel, she says she cancels her draconian Easter lockdown amid backlash from furious Germans. And it says, I take full responsibility for this misjudgment. I said, of course you do, Merkel. Who else would be responsible? Real leaders always take responsibility. And they also don't feel the need to stand up and loudly point that out. The real question is, would you still be saying this if Germans had stayed quiet? And we know the answer to that. Of course not. This is only the, mea culpa, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, once we find out that they did something we disagree with, or that we get our way. If everybody had been silent, they would have gone right ahead with everything they did, just like every time before it. But oh, I'm fully responsible. Yes, you're responsible. You didn't have to say that. That's something that bothers me, but this gets taken as sort of a presidential move or a leadership move. And that's the opposite of what it was. Now, on a note in regard to Bolivia, I found this to be very telling. And all these things kind of relate to the Western you know, apparatus of whatever we're calling this today. This clearly all together in this whole big weird agenda that's happening. But Bolivia was obviously a very clear U.S. agenda that included, I would argue, Israel and a few other of the European countries that had interests in specifically lithium and whatever else we could talk about. I have talked about in regard to Bolivia. But this is interesting. And I just talked about how this person was arrested. The puppet that was put in place after the U.S. government lied about the election in Bolivia and removed Evo Morales. And then the MIT proved that they did do that, and it wasn't actually what happened. Nobody cared, though. Even the AOS just got real quiet and just stopped caring about democracy. But she got arrested because she was a dictator put in place by a foreign power. And of course, now it's all about, oh, it's a political prisoner. Oh, this is the democratic government that's putting out. Now they're framing it that what they did is what just happened, right? Just that there, what just happened was the dictator taking over, and she was the democracy. It's ridiculous. But Bolivia's ex-president alleges abuse in prison. She's saying she's being abused, and she's actually claiming that she's starving herself out of protest. Oh, the media eats it up. The mainstream loves her for it. But guess what? Guess what? A leaked photo from today, and this was from the 23rd, shows that she's in prison, if you want to call it that, eating Burger King, despite her lawyers claiming that she's refusing food as part of a hunger strike. Good thing that we are all honest in the Western apparatus of propaganda. This is ridiculous. I just want you to recognize that it's all fake, all of it. They're always trying to frame it's about emotionally manipulating the average person out there to get what they want. That's what this is really about. Just makes me sick that this is the kind of people that the U.S. government supports. Now, on the same point of the two-party illusion, and in regard to the migrant discussion, and this is a really weird development because of how the timing and how it's being used, and especially including the next point, and Whitney, I was just talking about this today as well. Biden says the migrant surge began under Trump. We all know that's not true. Now, yes, there was an event like this that happened during his administration, but this event, this part of this, everybody knows that's not true. But everyone who's on his partisan side will pretend it is because they don't like Trump. You see, so people who are still invested in this obvious lie are doing it because they're benefiting themselves. It means they're either selfish or profiteering or whatever, or they're still lost to it, which I find increasingly hard to believe. But as I said, FFS, if you know what that means, when will all the two-party illusionists put aside their own interests and acknowledge that regardless of the side these politicians claim to stand on, they are all the same dishonest manipulators driving towards goals that have nothing to do with you. He say, well, now we're going to deal with this right way. The whole point is that everybody who supported Biden was under the guise that this was going to change. It's exactly the same thing, if not worse. And all they're saying now is, well, Trump started it and we're just going to keep doing what he did before and that makes that okay? Oh, we're going to put Harris in charge of the border discussion as she just laughed it off like it meant nothing. No, not today. I'm not going over there because I'm trying to pretend like it's not happening and we're all going to chuckle it off together. It's crazy. But here's the interesting point that we were just talking about. Pentagon, as you might have seen, approves the Health and Human Services, you know, this very alarming group that has ties to all sorts of manipulations of the past and testing on people, request to house migrant children at two military bases in Texas. Okay, remember the stories we're already seeing about how a lot of these children are seemingly being told anyway that they're testing positive for COVID-19. Now, assuming that's using a PCR test, which we know it is, by and large, we can easily assume that potentially half or almost all of them are probably false positives. Knowing what they're doing, this is the facts coming. Even the CDC reports 30%. So if we're talking 30% of that number, according to the very people we're supposed to be listening to, tell you that they will be false positives, that we're already still using the numbers at face value. But interestingly enough, the timing of all of this, when 60% of healthcare workers are saying no to the vaccine, when a third of the military is saying no to the vaccine, and people in the country are by and large saying, we don't trust this thing. It's interesting that suddenly we see this useful group of people who suddenly also have COVID-19, but we're going to move to military bases, you know, military warp speed. That's all, that's a military agenda where potentially these kids could be taken care of, right? Because, well, they're under our control now. And of course, we're going to give them this vaccine because they need it, because they're in danger. Well, suddenly it becomes a massive testing program for children who are going to be monitored because they're there and they're going to be giving the vaccine because we know that's how the justification is going to go. This just became a massive childhood vaccine test. I wonder if that's on accident. In any case, I'm pretty sure they thought of that themselves. Why would they be moving to military bases? It's a question you should ask yourself. But in any case, this will happen. I mean, does anybody doubt that they're going to justify that they should be given the vaccine because they're telling us they have COVID-19, despite the fact that they haven't been tested on children, despite the fact that they have basically zero risk of getting this or dying from it, according to the CDC? But it doesn't matter. They're already talking about testing on children, so this will be a moral obligation, they'll tell us. Or they won't tell us at all. In any case, I'm pretty sure this is, I mean, in my opinion, to make it clear, I very much think this is probably already happening. Just something to think about as we go into the rest of the discussions about how this kind of thing has always been the go-to of your government in the United States. But before we get onto that discussion, by and large, I just want to also point out that the same government we're talking about, not Biden's administration, but the same government with the new puppet in place, urges Supreme Court to let cops enter homes and seize guns without a warrant. This is so incredible to me. And what they're saying, and the point is not that whether or not it's passed or will pass. It's about the fact that your government right now is openly telling you that they don't care about your constitutional rights. We want the right to go in and take this without a warrant because we've decided unilaterally that we don't like what their rights are. It is, I mean, just because people have been so politically, you know, motivated and manipulated with the discussion of guns or immigration or whatever these hot button issues are, doesn't mean that you can just toss it aside. But that's what they're doing right there. You realize that the government, and let's just say Biden or his administration individually within the government, they swore oaths to this Constitution. What they're stating is literally treason. They're saying we don't care. We are going to violate our oath. We're going to go against our own country and our own citizens because we don't like what this thing is. Whether, you know, insert the issue, could be guns, could be anything. But because you've decided guns kill people because they're so serious, well, people are the ones using those things. They could use them in any case. But see, these arguments that are logical don't make sense to anybody who's been politically and emotionally manipulated. In any case, whatever your thoughts, that is illegal. And they don't care. So if the courts allow it, which means the judges are also violating their oaths, then they'll do it. Does that make it right? Does that make it legal? No, but they'll do it anyway, which just needs to show you the larger discussion of what these people really are. Now, in regard to Israel, before we move on to the glyphosate discussion, which will bring us into the nanotechnology, this is an article written by Robert Inlakesh yesterday, which is very, very alarming. We're going to have a discussion about this, he and I, and there's a video that I might put up from him today or possibly tomorrow where he goes into this a little bit more. But as the title reads, Israeli elections. Netanyahu close to forming ultra-right, right-wing racist government. Now, I urge people not to take this as a U.S. political point, as our right versus left, but more so think about this in the context of Israeli politics. And even the idea of saying racist government, that's not an opinion. These are stated goals by the people involved in his government. That's we're talking the very definition of the word racism, not because we don't like their government or how we're currently using the term all around the world today or in this country specifically. We're talking literal racism in the government and how they're forming this and going forward right now. And by and large, because of the U.S. help in allowing this to happen. But what this needs to continue to reflect on is the willingness of these governments to act this way, to kill, manipulate, rape, steal, pillage the people that they claim they care about, whether Palestinians or elsewhere, Yemeni people, American people, as well as the fact that they are lying to you in every possible way in regard to what their real goals are. But we're going to talk about this more because this needs to be discussed. But as the article reads, it says the parties with which he has aligned himself, Netanyahu, are a string of ultra-right wing religious Zionist parties, the most concerning of which is the Otzma. I don't want to mispronounce it, but literally stands for the Jewish Power Party. I mean, reflect on that, right? It's the same kind of absurdly contradictory thing as saying it's okay to have black power discussions or Jewish power discussions, but not white power discussions. I argue all of them are the same thing, right? The idea that you're trying to argue that one is better than everything else, if that is what's happening, because that is what's happening here. And there are groups like that within black movements that do the same, not all of them everywhere, right? This is the idea. It's this, all of these things are being acted on differently, but the same point is to act differently with these inherently in and of itself is racism, right? I mean, I'm not trying to pretend like there hasn't been an obvious racist element or entire overtaking of this country throughout its history, or the fact that we have things going back, whether, you know, Jim Crow or before, all the discussions we've had of very obvious inequality, or however you want to call it, but that still doesn't make it okay to suddenly just broad brush everybody else because of some overcompensating effort. That's racism. That's what's so frustrating. But anyway, back to the point, Jewish Power, the group, that's their name, Jewish Power, is led by a man named Itamar Ben-Gvir, who was convicted in 2007 of promoting racism and supporting a terror group. Ben-Gvir, and this is Netanyahu's government, Ben-Gvir has represented Israeli settlers, occupiers who are illegally occupying Palestinian territory, as an attorney, defending them in cases where they had committed attacks against Palestinians. He also has called for the expulsion of all Arabs from Israel, or otherwise known as occupied Palestine. He is a hardline supporter of Israel's illegal settlements. Jewish Power is so extreme, this blew my mind, that even the pro-Israel and pro-Netanyahu AIPAC lobby group have condemned that group as, quote, racist and reprehensible. AIPAC called the Jewish Power group racist and reprehensible. And Netanyahu is working with this group primarily for his new government. It says the leader of this religious Zionist party, which Jewish Power falls under the banner of, is a man named Bezalel Smotrich, who had once proposed segregating maternity wards so that Jewish women didn't have to give birth near Arabs. Smotrich has been accused of racism several times before and since then also holding strong anti-LGBT beliefs. Now it says, even if we look at Netanyahu's victory speech early this Wednesday morning, he spoke of a peace deal not including uprooting of Jews from their homelands. What he's actually referring to is the illegal settlements in the West Bank. But he's referring to it as uprooting Jewish people from their homelands. Their homelands. And as Robert just talked with me about, they're actually displacing thousands of Palestinians under the argument that some Israeli king from a long time ago had a garden where these people are now living. Remember, they were displaced to these places from the first places they lived. And now they're saying, oh, well, now where you are now, well, you have to move again because we decided this was the location of a garden from an Israeli king. But guess what, guys? That is fundamentally false because that's not what it was. It was Palestine before it was occupied by the Zionist Empire. And you know why we know that, despite them continuing to lie? Because Golda Meir, one of the first prime ministers and one of the leaders, one of the founders of Israel, has said it openly on the record. So ask yourself how that's even possible.
I mean, when were Palestinians born? What was all this area before the First World War? When Britain got the mandate over Palestine, what was Palestine then? Palestine was then the area between the Mediterranean and the Iraqi border.
You say there's no such thing
as East and West Bank? No. East and West Bank was Palestine. I'm a Palestinian. From 21 until 48, I carried a Palestinian passport.
I mean, the fact that that can even be, that's public information. Right. And what's even funnier is the person even interviewing her tries to interject that point. Oh, you're saying Palestine doesn't exist. That's clearly not even what she's saying. So the reality is we all know this. It's a historical fact that this was Palestine that was occupied. I mean, you can look these things up in regard to how the Zionist state was looking and discussing between three different locations and chose that area. So also entertain, you know, explain for me how it was God that chose it when you were personally as a group deciding between three different locations. Okay, this was a planned effort. In any case, the history is clear, but yet we're at a point in the world where people know that that's a fake shit. They know it's a lie. They know that it's a deception. And yet powerful people in powerful government positions continue to allow it to go forward. They know it's not true. How in the world is this possible? I mean, really, guys, how is this something that is still happening? How are we in a world where people are allowing this? We all see what this is. They know what it is. So it either means that we don't have the courage to push back enough to make it stop, or not enough people know about it. And I find that impossible to believe. The reality is very clear. And the media, yes, they've done an amazing job, a disgustingly amazing job of hiding that information from you. But at the very least, it shows you that everybody in the media, everybody in these powerful positions are choosing to ignore the reality that these people, the Palestinians, are just not good enough to have anything. They're lesser than. I mean, these are the very thing that we're talking about every time this comes up in the discussion, from the peace, the deal of the century, they called it, when they broke this immediately. It just, this is the most disgusting reality, that these people are being abused on a daily basis and your government doesn't care. In fact, they lie for it. He's talking about uprooting these settlers from their homelands. These are lands that they stole from people up until, I mean, currently happening, referring to the illegal settlers in the West Bank. It says a similar sentiment was offered in response to the ICC decision to investigate potential Israeli war crimes in the occupied territories, as Netanyahu framed the removal of illegal settlers, which, by the way, remember, the United Nations is very clear about this. They're illegal settlers. He framed the removal of them as a racist act of, get this, ethnic cleansing committed against the rightful owners of the West Bank. I mean, so what's the argument that these Palestinians invaded Israel and occupied the territory? I mean, guys, there's no possible thing that makes this make sense. The facts are very easy to find unless you're only listening to propagandists and what Israel has to say about what they want. I just played you the clip that made it clear that Palestine was very clearly there. So how is it possible that the entire world governments are completely continuing this and you're allowing it out there? Not everyone in the chat, obviously, but people at large. Now it says, despite the fact that Palestinians are almost unavoidable as an issue for Israel, the talk about Palestinians was almost nowhere to be seen. In fact, Netanyahu did not even mention them once. So in his speech about the future of his next administration, Palestinians weren't even mentioned, which just has to speak to how little they care about anything that has to do with Palestinians, despite their lip service to the rest of the world when the media pretends they care about it. Now, it says if Netanyahu was to include the United Arab List, which I've talked about in the past, in his government, he would meet the 61-seat requirement right now to take power and avoid a disastrous fifth round of elections, but refuses to allow an Arab party to be in the government, despite the fact that we're talking millions of people that supposedly are represented by the only democracy in the Middle East, we're told. Every Israeli government in history has been a coalition of different parties. Yet, an Arab party has never been included. It says, now we have an Arab party, which is a party of Palestinians, but with Israeli citizenships, right? So that's only, and even then, that's basically near to impossible for these people to attain. It says, which is actually open to the prospect of joining. They're willing to join, and they may see Netanyahu, we may see Netanyahu risk going to another round of elections rather than work with them. So he's willing to risk him losing than work with the Arab parties. Let me reiterate that right now. If this moment he chose to work with these Arab list, the Arab United Arab List, he would win right now. He would win and he would be the prime minister, but he's not doing that, and he's risking losing just so he doesn't have to work with them. And as he says, if this does not demonstrate racism, it is unclear what does. It says right now, 2,100 Palestinians are under threat of expulsion from their homes in their neighborhoods of Sheikh Jarrah and Silwan in East Jerusalem due to the efforts of illegal settler organizations. If the decision to expel residents in these areas are implemented this year, it will amount to the largest act of actual ethnic cleansing in Jerusalem on record after 1967. And that's all happening quietly where no one seems to care in the mainstream circles. Under COVID-19, mind you, right? They're quibbling about the smallest things because COVID, and how dare this happen, while Yemen continues to be a massive starvation capital of the world, world's worst humanitarian crisis, and no one cares about Saudis continuing to bomb them, or no one seems to care about the Palestinians, who, again, I'm not arguing they should. I think it's a blessing in disguise, but yet they're refusing to even give them vaccines. Do you imagine if that was Assad refusing people? This would be a nonstop story in the mainstream media. But because it's an ally, they ignore it completely. It's insulting that he calls the removal of illegal settlers ethnic cleansing while they're literally ethnically cleansing everything. It says, all this whilst the U.S. Biden administration sits by silently, defending Israel every turn and attempting to shield them from the coming ICC investigation into Israeli war crimes. This is the governments that we're working with here, guys. The kind of people that pretend to care about your rights and humans and life in general. Should make you want to break something. Does me anyway. But speaking of the same discussion, right? You know, how much they care about life and everything else, as well as a segue into why I think possibly why this action is being taken, but also a question about whether it could be involving something else. Biden criticized for supporting a misguided plan to poison Colombia's cocoa fields. Now, what's interesting about this has been an ongoing thing. It's not just Biden. It's been happening before Biden, Obama, and whoever else, and Trump as well. They all did this. They're spraying these cocoa fields, but you know, largely with where there's plenty of civilians around, with glyphosate. And it says criticized for supporting a misguided plan. Misguided. Love how they frame this. Not a criminal act, just a misguided misjudgment. Isn't that always how they do it? Rather be incompetent than criminal. A plan to poison Colombia's cocoa fields. Poison. Do you realize glyphosate is literally in everything, everywhere around you right now? It is everywhere. They did this to already. Our planet is drenched in glyphosate. You'll find it in your urine. You'll find it in the cotton on your shirt. It's everywhere. And here they are using it to poison cocoa fields. That really makes you feel safe, doesn't it? I'm sure they did all the right research to make sure, right? Obviously not. In fact, there was a plenty of research. They just ignored it and listened to what the company who profited from glyphosate had to say. What does that make you remember? What does it make you think about? Literally what we're living right now with everything in the vaccine companies. We're listening to what they have to say about a product they're profiting from. This is how your government cares about you and thinks about your safety. Now it says, Colombia wants to restart the toxic aerial spraying of cocoa, the base ingredient for cocaine, as well as a hell of a lot of other things, but let's pretend that's only about cocaine. As early as next month, drawing support from U.S. President Joe Biden and sharp criticism from experts. Now think about the absurdity of the fact that Colombia produces about 70% of the world's cocaine and is one of the chief allies in South America of the U.S. government. They literally operate out of Colombia to operate their illegal actions against Venezuela and other countries in South America, right? They've recently accused Venezuela of being a narco trafficking. It's just how insulting to us to pretend like they're actually trying to stop the cocaine trade out of a country they work with that produces 70% of the world's cocaine. Or, you know, like they pretend they're stopping the opium trade as it exponentially increases under their watch in Afghanistan, when the very group they said they were trying to stop, the Taliban, had almost eradicated it before they came in. Oh, and don't forget that the increase dramatically of opioid overdoses and use in this country perfectly correlates with the increased growing of opium under the watch of the U.S. military. But who cares about any of that stuff, right? The reality here is that they are very much not, they don't care about this. So what are they really doing? Especially when you find out that the actual action of using this to spray doesn't, in fact, actually stop the cocaine or growing of cocoa. It says earlier this month, Biden's administration celebrated Colombia's decision to restart aerial eradication of cocoa in its annual International Narcotics Control Strategy Report. I doubt that's actually even what they're trying to accomplish. Colombian President Ivan Duque insists it's the best option in the country's war on drugs. You know, the 20 plus, 30, you know, plus year catastrophic failure that we call the war on drugs, which is really the war of increasing the drug trade, right? I mean, that's all it really is. It exponentially increased everything, just like we did, just, you know, like we actually know from things like prohibition, which should speak to the idea that they know that too. So probably what they want to accomplish, sort of like they did with prohibition, where the mafia basically was created with prohibition itself, and all the police and the governments were profiting as well. That's how this stuff works. And here we are with the failed war on drugs, and they're continuing to pretend like they're fighting that. The quote, recently announced decision sends an unfortunate message to the Colombian people that your administration is not committed to abandoning the ineffective and damaging war on drugs internationally. We all see this. I mean, think of this, only works in the sphere of government where you can catastrophically fail at something over and over and over and over. We're talking 20 years, not even a single benefit to show from this. And ultimately, continue to do the same thing, which is the definition of insanity, but it's because it's working for something else. What you need to realize is this is accomplishing something, just not what they're telling you it is. They'll continue to fight the war on terror and the war on everything else, which is only achieving their goals, and that's why they keep doing it. The experts point to how aerial spraying with glyphosate can cause serious health problems. Yeah, but who cares if it's in all of your food and your clothes, though, right? Such as cancer, miscarriages, and respiratory illness and environmental destruction, biodiversity loss, soil damage, and contamination of water sources. But who cares? Because it's only about fighting cocaine, right? They also highlight that aerial spraying is ineffective at eliminating cocoa crops. Okay, so it doesn't even do what they're trying to do. And they fail at doing it. But they keep doing it. Anybody make sense of that? Again, it's because this is achieving a goal that we don't see, whatever that is. For decades, the U.S. has funded eradication efforts in a bid to lower the cultivation of cocoa plants and curb the amounts of cocaine arriving on U.S. soil, like while they operate from that country, and while this effort for 20 years has not actually done that. But let's just do it again. Of course, that makes lots of money for the people producing glyphosate and everything else, as well as whatever they're actually doing with this. Glyphosate, better known in the U.S. as the main ingredient in Roundup, Monsanto Roundup, was sprayed on cocoa plants in Colombia throughout the presidencies of Bill Clinton, George Bush, and Barack Obama. But less was known then about the serious health and environmental implications today. But again, that's not true, by the way. That this is Vice News doing what it does best and gaslighting people about things you should know. But less was known about then about the serious health. No, I've been covering this for 10 years more. The studies have always been there. They're choosing to listen to what the company says instead of what plenty of other studies have said, including things from the EPA and others. One of the biggest ones, what was that? I forget which regulatory agency it was, but they came out with a huge claim that this was causing cancer, and then they just got pushed back by other studies that they funded. And we've already proven that Monsanto manipulated those studies and basically wrote them for the regulatory agencies that are supposed to be held into account. If you're interested, all this is covered on my website. I'll show you a few of them in a moment. But of course, we didn't know all incompetent rather than criminal every time. Today, glyphosate is banned or restricted in around 20 countries, including Vietnam, France, Italy. The World Health Organization currently lists it as a probable human carcinogen. But guess what, guys? Your government still uses it everywhere. It's banned in 20 countries, just like the AstraZeneca vaccine, or at least it was suspended and are already using it again, which I'll talk about probably tomorrow. But they don't care. We can't challenge World Health Organization guidelines, but we don't care about this one and that one and this one here. We'll do what we want. It's a probable carcinogen, and it's literally everywhere all the time in the United States and the world for that matter. The world is drenched in this stuff, and it's a poison. Great stuff, right? Great stuff. But going forward on this discussion, I want you to understand a major point to this. This is Brandon Turville from 2016. Groundbreaking review shows how glyphosate alters DNA toward chronic illness. Okay, think about the relevance of that and where we are right now. And recognize that this is probably just one very small element of a much larger operation. We've talked about geoengineering and plenty of stuff. And remember, for those that don't know this yet, this is not a secret. Geoengineering is openly happening today. Openly. Look, just to jump forward to the end for a quick point. This was actually up here. I'll talk about this in a second. Dimming the sun could help cool the earth, Bill Gates says, right? Even though this has been going on for a long time, this is not new. Brennan. Well, that's strange. I'm forgetting his first name. You know, Mr. CIA Brennan. He talked about this in a panel. This was in regard to Harvard as well. That was like 4 years ago. More than that, even. They announced we are going to be doing this, and yet people still call it conspiracy theory to talk about chemtrails. They're doing it openly. So when we talk about what this could be accomplishing, and as we see that glyphosate alters DNA toward chronic illness, according to the study, which I'll show you next, is it possible this is happening on a very broad scale? And is that why it's literally everywhere? And is that why it's happening in regard to chronic illness? These are all questions that you should be willing to ask. And no, for all the fact checkers out there, I'm not saying it's the case. But we're being an honest reporter and saying, let's look at the data so you can make the decision for yourself. Oh, fake news. A review of scientific literature is linking one of the most well-known and notorious herbicides in the United States, which, you know, banned everywhere else in the world, 20 other countries, to a variety of diseases as a result of the mechanisms that modifies the function of human DNA. Isn't that interesting? In a review entitled Glyphosate Pathways to Modern Disease 5, Amino Acid Analog of Glycine in Diverse Proteins, conducted by Anthony Samuel, PhD, an independent scientist, and Sanif, PhD, a scientist at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, as yet another litany of reasons why glyphosate is dangerous to human health. But they're still using it today, right? Oh, that's what happened. That's weird. I thought I had that highlighted. Any case, this is the study itself, which I highly recommend you read in its entirety. But let's look at this, a couple of these parts. Glyphosate, a synthetic amino acid and analog of glycine, is the most widely used biocidione of the planet, which is, that's weird. I've never seen, I looked at it earlier and I forgot to look it up, but I'm imagining it means a bio sort of pesticide kind of scenario. In any case, it just looked it up and it didn't have any definition. Its presence in food for human consumption and animal feed is ubiquitous. Like, realize how alarming that is. These are two PhDs that are making it very clear. The presence of glyphosate in your food that you eat and animal food that they eat is ubiquitous, meaning it is literally everywhere. How did we allow this to happen? Epidemiological studies have revealed a strong correlation between the increasing incidence in, biocide on the planet. That's what it was. So it's just missing a space for some reason. I think it's the way I bunched up the screen. That's strange. Okay, so biocide, which makes sense. Okay, so going back to it, epidemiological studies have revealed a strong correlation between the increasing incidence in the United States of a large number of chronic diseases and the increased use of glyphosate herbicide on corn, soy, and wheat crops. Glyphosate acting as a glycine analog may be mistakenly incorporated into peptides during protein synthesis. This is crazy stuff. And I talked about this years ago. They're telling you right there that there's a strong correlation between increasing chronic illness and disease right now that it's being called other things as we spray Columbia. Glyphosate substitution for conserved glycines can easily explain a link with diabetes, obesity, asthma, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, pulmonary edema, adrenal insufficiency, hypothyroidism, Alzheimer's disease, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, ALS. Okay, I do know ALS. Parkinson's disease, prion disease, where this is a continually recurring thing I see coming up in regard to COVID-19 and the vaccines. Lupus, mitochondrial disease, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, neural tube defects, infertility, hypertension, glaucoma, osteoporosis, fatty liver disease, and kidney failure. You realize that just said it explains it can easily explain the link between all of those things. That's crazy. The correlation data together with the direct biological evidence make a compelling case for glyphosate action as a glycine analog to amount for much of glyphosate's toxicity. 4-5 years ago, right, we're talking about how this is basically altering your DNA towards chronic illness that's being used for obvious reasons. And here we are spraying glyphosate around the world. I just find that to be very telling with where we are right now. But just as we wrap this up on glyphosate, recognize that this is 2016 as well. The piss test heard around the world. 150 European Parliament members take a urine test for glyphosate. Guess what? Spoiler alert. Every single one of them tested positive for glyphosate in their urine. Every one of them. Guess what happened after that? They kept using it in the United States. Here's another one. Monsanto's glyphosate found in all wines tested in Napa Valley, even the organic ones, which, by the way, now means they're no longer organic. But they don't care. That's not going to happen, though, because they just pretend that glyphosate doesn't count and they make it all organic anyway. But technically speaking, it's not organic if that's the case. The whole world is no longer organic since it's drenched in glyphosate. In the sense of organic food terminology. But we're talking about this it's everywhere. Monsanto weed killer found in 14 popular German beers. And these were like craft beer companies that did this for generations. And these are beers that they're very, very careful to make sure that they're specifically done a very special way. And they all find glyphosate. And basically, in the sense of what they're doing, ruins these beers. But this is back in 2016 as well. This was everywhere. So thinking about the idea that this is causing an increase in chronic illness and regarding your DNA of all things, we need to think about how and what this means going forward in this discussion. And again, thinking about whether or not there is something that might be used in regard to spraying people all over the world. Now, I want to reiterate a point that I made the other day in regard to how long this has been possible. Here is Alistair Allen speaking on the inevitability of smart dust. And I've played this a couple of times. Now, I want you to listen again just to the first part and understand that what he's discussing is something that was available in 2004. And he's talking about smart dust. Now, consider what that could be today and what they might be using it for today.
We're still essentially the banging the rocks together stage for this sort of stuff. And you haven't really seen anything yet. So this is closer to the end of the vision. This is this powder-sized chip. And that's a salt crystal. So this is a small thing. It's something called the Mu chip from Hitachi. It's the smallest commercially available RFID system in the world and can be pulse powered by radio waves. It doesn't require a battery. You can literally scatter this stuff like dust or embed it into a sheet of paper. And you know what the really interesting thing about this technology is? This was commercially released 10 years ago.
So we're talking 2014, he's talking about this. So in 2004, they had smart dust that, what is that, a fifth of the size of a grain of salt that could be run by your own body's power. And today we're talking about things the size of a quarter and going, look at this breaking new technology. They're lying to you. Okay. This stuff is ubiquitous and it's happening now. And we know that this is being used. There's been discussions about it. I'm not talking like everywhere all over the world, but we've already talked about uses and how they're using it. And we're talking now, I mean, this is 2014, he's having this conversation. We jump forward to 2021 and the discussion of how they told you in 2002 that they would alter evolution with nanotechnology in 20 years. Now, the point of this, let me just finish what he says, actually.
So the inevitability of smart dust. So what is smart dust? Well, Smart dust, of course, isn't a new concept. It's the
apologies, guys.
The
hold on.
Back in the 90s.
I forgot I switched to me. Hold on. Let me get it back on. You heard it nonetheless, but let me just play it again so you can actually see the video.
These aren't going to go away. They're going to just become invisible. We're still essentially the banging the rocks together stage for this sort of stuff. And you haven't really seen anything yet. So this is closer to the end of the vision. This is this powder-sized chip.
I take that back. That's far smaller than a fifth. I mean, what would you say? A tenth, maybe less?
And that's a salt crystal. So this is a small thing. It's something called the Mu chip from Hitachi. It's the smallest commercially available RFID system in the world and can be pulse-powered by radio waves. It doesn't require a battery. You can literally scatter this stuff like dust or embed it into a sheet of paper. And you know what the really interesting thing about this technology is? This was commercially released 10 years ago. So the inevitability of smart dust. So what is smart dust? Well, smart dust, of course, isn't a new concept. It originated with DARPA back in the 90s.
Yep.
And it's general purpose computing, sensors, wireless networking, all bundled up into millimeter scale sensor modes, drifting in the air currents, flecks of computing power settling on your skin, ingested, monitoring you inside and out. And if you don't think that's possible, this is the Michigan Micromode. It's a cubic millimeter in size. And in deference to the speaker before, yes, it runs an ARM processor.
Your body.
It's a tiny computer and it features data processing, data storage, wireless comms. And it's probably as close to the true smart dust vision from the early DARPA days as we've come so far.
Data storage, comms, right? Remote activity, RFID. These are all things that were used in 2004. So imagine what could, I'm not saying it's happening. The point is, especially on this show, we need evidence to make claims of any kind. But we should not be afraid to discuss possibilities, especially from a government that has openly admitted to testing on us in many different ways throughout the years. So is it possible that this is being already used in many ways? Remember, we talked about someone like Charles Lieber, who was arrested for they claimed working with China in regard to basically taking funding for things from China that they didn't openly discuss with the U.S. government. I find that to be hard to believe because it was publicly happening that they were working. But the bottom line is Charles Lieber was working on technology that was making nanotechnology that mimicked viruses. That's incredible. The correlation there is impossible to miss. So what is it actually that we're dealing with today? Right? We shouldn't be afraid to ask these questions. Is that what this is? I don't know. But what I do know is this is something that they've been working on for decades, that they said would make big changes in our lives right now, 20 years ago. Fine, right where we are now, we would be evolving and changing everything based on this technology. So is it a coincidence that the leading guy in the world making nanotechnology mimicking viruses just suddenly gets shelled away to a dark corner before all this starts? Interesting.
They're designed to harvest energy from the environment around them and to communicate via a mesh network.
Mesh network, and meaning they communicate with each other independently, your body with somebody else's body and so on.
Of course, the energy is the key problem with it. Can make the computing small, the energy is hard.
And I'll leave it there. So you guys can watch this more if you want. Very, very interesting video. But going forward to where this is taking us in this conversation of nanotechnology, converging technologies for improving human performance. We've talked about this June 2002. This is the one we just discussed where they're talking about converging your nanotechnology with your biology, with information technology, with cognitive science. That's what those four things stand for. And what they're claiming is by doing this, and we've gone over this in a previous show and gone over the claims and what they're arguing and what they're saying they're going to do. And the idea that they're just simply saying the integration and synergy of these technologies is going to radically change our lives. And the plan was they would be ready to do this in 20 years, which puts us pretty much on mark right now between all of the other things we've shown you that seem to be marked about 2021 to 2022. It's pretty incredible. But the point is to bring this up today. Somebody recently shared this with me, and it shows you that this is not just from 2002, you know, broadly lobbing this out to 20 years from now, but that they continue to follow up with this. Here is 2013, July. Convergence of knowledge, technology, and society, which they continue to reference as CKTS. Beyond convergence of nano, bio, info, cognitive technology. So beyond what they have not even accomplished yet. Realize how far this is being planned. So they're saying in, you know, 7 years from this, we'll be at this stage. But now let's plan out what we do beyond that. And this document is alarming, far more than the other one, in my opinion. So let's go through some of this. Under wellness and human development, it says improving human potential is a main societal goal. Now, remember, these documents are talking about what the powerful have gathered together, including governments and different regular agencies, are discussing what they're going to try to accomplish. You know, things like the World Health Organization, the World Economic Forum, and your governments are gathering and discussing how they can do all these things, irrespective of what you want, to better what they say is everyone's lives. It's really, I would argue, to better their control and what they want to accomplish. But it's always framed under their improving your life in some way. Now, remember also the discussion from Whitney Webb about the legacy legacy systems that people like Eric Schmidt and the whole artificial intelligence commission have discussed changing. Things like everyone American owning their own car. They want to change these things because it benefits what they can accomplish. So they're changing things that we don't want changed for their benefit. That's an open thing they're talking about. But they argue it'll be better for everybody because we're stopping bad guy China at the expense of you. If that's actually what ultimately happens, because really it seems like they're just becoming exactly what China is doing. But anyway, it says all forms of scientific and technological progress will depend upon the ability of human beings to have the intelligence, wisdom, and health to invest energy into new projects and make carefully considered decisions about convergence and developments that fundamentally impact their lives. But of course, the point is that this isn't about you. We're not having a vote on this. They're talking about their circles. It is realistic to believe that physical and cognitive potential can indeed be increased at the individual collective levels to a significant extent. And this observation should not be mistaken for fanciful dream, but as the logical extension of advances in education, communication, and information technologies and cognitive sciences. You know, advances that they're not publicly discussing. A holistic approach for healthcare is a main wellness component. So as we go into this weird scenario where they're claiming to adapt quickly with things they've already tried just because COVID-19 just oddly seems to be the focus they laid out long before this ever happened. Hood and Flores, 2012, called for a predictive, participative, preventative, and personal P4 medicine that is founded on systems biology. Right. So remember that what we just talked about pre-crime, we're also talking about medical pre-crime, the predictive aspect of this using the technological aspect. People cannot achieve their full potential if they suffer physical or mental health problems or must cope with chronic disabilities. Converging technologies have the potential to improve cancer detection, treatment, develop regenerative medicines, and harness the human immune system in new ways to maintain vigor and increase longevity. They also can improve human life through all of its stages toward achievements of total wellness based on reliable information about the individual's particular needs and nutrition, exercise, medical treatment, and emotionally positive life experiences. Meaning, collecting literally everything about your entire life can benefit you, of course. One essential tool for health and well-being is comprehensive data. Of course, you know, we can't help you unless we know everything about you, including genomic information about the individual, provided both to the individual in a manner intelligible without technical training and in a reasonable and comprehensive manner. Let me jump down here. Improving human wellness is particularly important in child development. Now, these are the points I wanted to get to. Now, it says, high quality and affordable healthcare in the future will require a partnership between medical professionals, their patients, and scientists and engineers. Isn't that interesting? Right? So exactly what we're now doing, right? With the implantables and the wearables and the, you know, all the vaccine passports. Medicine must evolve from a passive coincidence model to an active convergence model. Medical pre-crime. From reactive to proactive patients. From waiting for a crisis to taking preemptive approaches. Its aim should include reducing economic costs for medical treatments for lost productivity. Biomedicine-based convergence is of immediate importance to society. Five health wellness goals that are largely achievable in the coming decade illustrate the range of directions convergence can take. Improved methods will detect cancer and chronic diseases earlier and identify the appropriate treatment for the particular condition and patient. Now, again, these things, if being conducted by somebody without negative intentions, sure, it could be fine. But the idea that this ultimately amounts to invasive detection and cataloging of your personal medical and personal information. You can't see these things coming if they're not obligating you to put forward all of your information. And we're not even getting to the most alarming parts yet. It says improved collection, analysis, and delivery of data will monitor general health, as well as a myriad of specific conditions toward wellness and prevention of disease. Just recognize how much all of this seems to be focused around medical disease prevention and predicting. This is a massive document. Given more effective ways to halt the progress of a disease, the emphasis will shift to repairing damage and restoring healthy functioning, including tissue regeneration and advanced prosthetics. Radically improved understanding of the complex human immune system, including swift and efficient analysis of biomarkers in the individual patients, will harness the immune system as a constant monitor of health and disease and enhance its curative powers. Now, remember biomarker, I'll read the last one. Reduction in the time needed to detect and treat emergence of highly infectious diseases at the global level will occur, along with design and development of cost-effective medical responses to threats, repurposing of drugs and tailoring of drug and vaccine use to the individual, and seeking innovative cures to currently untreatable conditions. Tailoring, before I go forward, it's important to think about this point of biomarkers. This is something I've talked about before, but something that seems very relevant in the way this is all going. Now, this is specifically around psychiatry, but it applies the same way, especially with the reference points they make. Now, it says for more than 20 years, researchers have attempted to identify diagnostic and prognostic biomarkers for psychiatric disorders, including schizophrenia and others. If it is cautioned that widespread biomarker testing could lead to negative consequences such as discrimination in health insurance and employment, as well as selective abortion. Now, this is from 2010. The point being, that's what we're literally already seeing, right? Not with biomarkers necessarily, but the idea that we're saying, you know, you may have something, and so now we're treating you differently unless you take certain actions. But this is leading to the point Whitney and I have discussed about pre-crime, medical pre-crime, because it comes to the point to where, and this is something we've already discussed in the UK, keeping information about the DNA and basically saying that it might affect people's mental stability in regard to making decisions, previously having COVID-19. So it may get to a point where we're saying, you have a biomarker for leading to this illness, which means you're now in a different category, which is exactly what this will amount to, which is what they're saying here. Now, it discusses potential for misuse. Research into the identification of biomarkers for psychiatric disorders has raised ethical questions, especially concerning the collection and usage of genetic information. Now, psychiatric and medical conditions are very different, but I argue it's the same kind of idea that regardless of what they're trying to accomplish can be misused. And that's the point about it, even going back to the concept of vaccines, the intent, the people driving the agenda, whether or not, if it was done correctly, it could be safe and effective. The point is the intent behind it is alarming. And that's why it doesn't matter what they're wielding, right? And any object in the hand of somebody trying to hurt you can still hurt you. Ill treatment. This is the important part. There is also the potential for misusing biomarkers in a new wave of eugenics or sterilization campaigns. There is a long history of misuse of genetic information by many governments to discriminate against those perceived as genetically unfit and to restrict their reproductive decisions. In the United States, a program of compulsory sterilization of mentally ill individuals began in 1897. You probably didn't know that, with the passage of legislation in Michigan. However, the movement did not gain momentum until 1927, when the Supreme Court legitimized for forceful sterilization of patients at a Virginia home for the mentally, in this case, it says retarded. Of course, this was the discussion at the time in Beck versus Bell. Now, what they're telling you is that this was not only something that they pushed forward, but then it was later legitimized and legalized by the courts. In 1927, the U.S. government was forcefully sterilizing people that they thought were lesser than, right? This is what we're always telling you about in regard to the concept of where eugenics was actually born. Now, it says over the next 15 years after that, the number of sterilizations steadily increased, right? So we're getting close to the 50s here. Until the case of Skinner versus Oklahoma complicated the legal situation. This case held that compulsory sterilization could not be imposed as a punishment for a crime. Criminal sterilization laws were designed to target criminality, believed by some at the time to be a hereditary trait. This is eugenics. Such programs were eventually abandoned after World War II. Why? Well, because the association between the eugenics movement and the Nazis. So all they did was change what they called it. Isn't it funny how we continue to see some of the worst things we claim in history always stem back to the U.S. government? You know how you just take examples of the terrorists. It's like, Saddam Hussein is the biggest threat. And okay, well, he was your ally until suddenly you decided not. Or Osama bin Laden was a warrior of peace, according to the Washington Post, up until he suddenly wasn't. It's weird how all these worst people ever were allies of the U.S. government until they suddenly weren't. In this case, it's the same concept. The U.S. government was leading the charge with this horrible concept until it was picked up by somebody that they didn't want to associate with. So they quietly pulled it back. Still happening right now. Such programs were eventually abandoned. During that period, though, when the U.S. government was doing it openly, more than 65,000 individuals were sterilized in 33 states. Such practices are not simply relegated to the pages of history, though. Current laws in China authorize the sterilization of individuals who are genetic carriers of serious medical disorders, including mental illnesses. Right? This is something that your government quietly agrees with. The Maternal and Infant Healthcare Law of 1995 requires couples to undergo a premarital medical examination if the results of this examination reveal a, quote, genetic disease of a serious nature, which is considered to be inappropriate for childbearing. The couple must take, quote, long-term contraceptive measures or undergo a sterilization procedure before they can get married. This all stems back to the same idea of the biomarkers they're discussing here and using nanotechnology to better be able to suss those out from individuals. Find that to be quite telling. Going forward, here's another example. Out of the ashes of eugenics, this is 2010, diagnostic regimes in the United States and the making of a disability minority. It says, Snyder and Mitchell interpret eugenics in the United States as an expansive testing regime that produced disabled people as a species of defective intelligence and aberrant psych physiology. What resulted was a frenzy of medical assessment that produced for a time a subnormal nation out of the classification of defective biologies. The newly professional scientific disciplines flocked to participate in the identification, care, and training of those labeled feeble-minded. So the point here is that the idea is that even at a time Right now, we have something happening that's questionable easily, and people nonetheless are flocking to it because the same reason they did then. Because one, it's allowable. Two, it's a booming industry. You know, you want to be the big famous doctor? Well, you jump in the eugenics field because that's what everyone's doing, right? No one stops to reflect on whether it's right, whether it's moral. That's the point. And this all stems back to the same entities and the same governments we're talking about today. Proliferating scientific representations of those deemed to inhibit subnormal bodies ultimately provided the justification for institutionalizing, sterilizing, and destroying the liberty of those classified as inferior. The authors understand the repercussions of this methodology not as flawed science, that's important, but as the basis for contemporary definitions of disability as degrees of deviation from profoundly subjective aesthetic and functional criteria. A study of the eugenics movement in the United States demonstrates that what we refer to today as physical and cognitive disability provides two paradoxical outcomes. First, those labeled as recipients of curative interventions tend to suffer the residual taint of their pathological identifications while failing to benefit from the initial promises of the cure, in quotes, so zealously espoused by diagnostic regimes. I think that's very appropriate to term it that way, especially where it is today. Second, those who occupy medically based classifications of deviance serve as models for a more general comprehension of human biology, even as the research subjects themselves are marginalized from social participation. This is not gone, guys. While we're watching 60% of all the people they say died from COVID in England, we're all disabled. While we're watching them give do not resuscitate orders to people with mental disabilities, which has nothing to do with whether or not they're more at risk in COVID, we need to recognize that something is happening here. Or the fact that we watched a whistleblower from Germany show us that they were forcefully vaccinating people with dementia. 8 of them later died. You could argue it wasn't from the vaccine, but that's not the point. I think it makes makes the most sense in that scenario. But in any case, they're forcefully vaccinated. Why did they pick out the 31 people with dementia? Something's happening here. And this is something that we need to recognize before this continues. This is one aspect of this very alarming agenda, and all of them need to be stopped. All of this. This is something that we cannot allow to go forward. Now, going forward on this document, That's interesting. I swear I had another one there, but I don't want to waste time on it. But the next one, action opportunities. The study panel sees an international opportunity. Now remember, this is 2013, right? The study panel, which I'll just go ahead and say now, and I'll show you in a minute, includes Bob Langer, of all people, sees the opportunity to develop and apply CKTS, convergence of knowledge and tech of society, in ways that will produce synergies leading to technological, economic, environmental, and social benefits. An international network to collaboratively advance the methods and applications of convergence is proposed. So, you know, getting together with everybody that wants this to happen and making this happen, regardless of whether we voted for it or whether we even are aware it's happening. The panel also proposes a proactive, integrative program in the United States to focus disparate R&D energies into a coherent activity that distills the best of our knowledge and abilities to the greater good of the national and global human communities. Research and development energies. So are we the testing ground? Integrate programs in the U.S. to focus on research and development energies in regard to this. We're talking nanotechnology, the convergence of these things in our biological lives, and they're saying the research and development energies in the United States to distill the best of our knowledge and abilities for the greater good. You got to be scared when they talk about the greater good. Concerted efforts would be required to develop the CKTS initiative, again, convergence of knowledge and truth of society in society. To develop a CKTS initiative that could take advantage of convergence as a fundamental opportunity for progress. This initiative could cooperate with and maintain U.S. competitiveness with parallel efforts already underway in other economies, including the European Union, Korea, Japan, Brazil, and China. always recognize that there's a collaboration happening that we're not supposed to really be aware of. The proposed U.S. initiative would incorporate convergence innovations in 5 modes of support. Now, think about this as we're talking about what they've been doing since 2013 in order to make you comfortable with this, whether or not you knew what was happening, right? So in 2013, they're talking about doing these things, which they then did, in order to incorporate the innovations and make you want this to happen. Like if this was something that was being done for the betterment of everybody, it would be discussed. These would be openly discussed. But we've already talked about the previous document where they urge secrecy because they know people will push back when they don't understand. So they don't want you to know because they know what's best for you, or really that's the argument they use. But it says centers for establishing new creative and innovative socioeconomic models based on convergence, including methods, education, research, standards, informics, and biomedicine. So centers that basically create the models that lead you into all of these things, not publicly stating, here's our future. Technology platforms for addressing societal grand challenges, including distributed and connected NBIC manufacturing. Remember, this NBIC, again, is the nano, bio, information, and cognitive together. Manufacturing and global virtual factories, use of converging cognitive technologies in society, brain mapping activities, and cognitive computing. These aren't public discussions, guys. Brain mapping activities in 2013. Programs for creating a shared universal convergence database and methods to evaluate convergence, risk governance, and integration of science into society. Organizations to monitor and accelerate increases in human potential, societal sustainability, and improvement decisions analysis using the convergence-divergence cycle. My point in this is that all these things are being planned out that have nothing to do with what you want or what you think should happen. This is all about coercing the general mindless public into doing what they want, whether or not it's for the best interest. Government coordination. This is what's crazy to me. If this is some new thing they're doing only because COVID-19, how do we explain the fact that they're talking about a federal convergence office, the U.S. government, a federal convergence office, for supporting convergence in science, technology, investment planning and policies, decision-making, wellness, and long-term human development activities, supporting our aging society, and sustaining Earth systems, as well as advancing ethical, legal, and public participation aspects of convergence. A federal convergence office? The point being, this was planned a long time ago. All of it. This one is discussing integrated and distributed production systems. Now it says advancing manufacturing through converging NBIC technologies will be essential to the progress of economic and quality of life initiatives. Now it's saying, as we gain understanding of the converging technologies, these are 3 areas that show promise. Distributed and connected manufacturing, enabling a process flexibility. Was this the right one? Let me make sure. Maybe it was these. I think this was the one. Manufacturing process DNA is a metaphor suggesting that the design of manufacturing processes could be structured in a manner like the genetic code. Now, what does it make you think of? Sort of like the mRNA platform, like a computer platform to plug and play new variants to make vaccines. I find this to be very telling. The manufacturing processes could be structured in a manner like the genetic code. So are we going to just ignore the fact that they outlined exactly what they're doing with this mRNA platform 9 years ago? I mean, that's crazy. Of course, you could argue it's because they just planned it and they saw it coming. But no, the idea is this whole platform was supposed to be something that they hadn't even done successfully until COVID-19. But here they are mapping it out in 2013. Allowing the rapid switching in and out of production steps and system components, and allowing precise control over product parameters with very little effort. That is the mRNA platform. So tell me how they knew that and how they could plan it out to be coming right into where we are now. Integration of the social and physical sciences could optimize design and production methods, not merely relying upon the functioning of market mechanisms to determine what products are produced, but also incorporating sustainability and general human welfare into decision-making at all stages. We know how when they get into sustainability, what that ultimately translates to. Finally, now there's one that I see, by the way, when this when yesterday, if you remember the show where my entire computer crashed before we went live and the whole thing refreshed, it removed a bunch of stuff that I had saved, which was very frustrating to me. I had to go through all of this again. I'm just making sure there was one thing. I might've been a different graph or somewhere else. I might've just lost it. There was a timeline and I feel like it might've been in this one. Doesn't look like it. Okay. Going forward. Opportunity for action. The panel identified synergistic opportunities for international collaboration in projects, right? So again, showing you international collaboration for the concept of convergence of knowledge and tech of their society and the concept of combining nanotechnology, information technology, biological and cognitive sciences. And they're telling you that the panel identified the opportunity for all the world to collaborate with this. Now, remember, we're talking about how it's the likelihood that, or has it ever even happened in history, that most every government got together and did the same action around some major event. That's incredible. And we're talking about, to talk about the real term worldwide conspiracy, that's what we're talking about. That doesn't have to mean some kind of what the term conspiracy theory has become to mean. It means that we're talking about all these world governments coming together and discussing this all the way back then. It has proposed the establishment of an international network to identify and deliberate methods for convergence. You know, could that be the World Economic Forum? Could that be, you know, whatever the international network became of what vehicle they were using to drive this forward? The envisioned benefits of convergence suggested above can be brought to life through the CKTS initiative. This study offers new ideas how to improve the decision-taking and transformation approach based on the convergence-divergence process. Now, here is the slides. And what's crazy to me is this looks ridiculous in a lot of ways. Not this slide here, but some of these. And this is from NSF.gov. This is the same group, National Science Foundation. This is your government. Now, going back to the top, I just want to point out a few things about this. This is kind of like the overview. Progress and convergence, basic concepts. Now, this is in 2017, right? So this is now all the way forward from 2013, and they're talking about all of this. It's still ongoing, right? So realize that this is something that just has, I find it very telling that this discussion just is why would this not be one of the most prominent discussions around what's happening right now, right? Because that's what this is. Nanotechnology and the vaccines, nanotechnology and damn near everything that's happening right now. That's the point. So why is it so quiet? Isn't this what they wanted? Well, as it says, convergence is a core opportunity for progress. Earlier studies, and these are the ones we talked about, right? We've talked about this one. This is one we haven't talked about, in fact, but this is something that's been ongoing. Material unity at the nanoscale and technological integration from the nanoscale, powerful transforming tools. Where was it? 12 challenging ideas. Hierarchically interconnected world, brain machine and brain robotic systems. Just some of these images just seem, you know, like this would be totally dismissed if it wasn't on a government website. Vision of the world as a distributed interconnected brain with various architectural level cyber net. I mean, this is what they've been driving for 20 years. And I don't understand why this would be something that just gets ignored in the middle of the most prominent opportunity to do so, which my point is, I don't think that's what's happening. I think it's very clearly that this is not being ignored. It's just not being discussed with us. Closed loop brain control, brain machine interface. This is just real world stuff, guys. It's happening now. It's already been happening. Remember thinking about the nano smart dust discussion. I think there was one other that I wanted to show that stood out to me, maybe not. In any case, you should go through and look at these because it's just incredible stuff. Now, these aren't meant to be public. These are things that are, they are public, but they're not, shared by the media. This is something that was for internal use. Here, by the way, is Robert Langer, PhD from MIT. We talked about the panel discussing international collaboration and all this stuff. Well, this is that panel. And if you don't remember who he is, here's Bob Langer. Bob Langer, the coronavirus common denominator tied to Charles Lieber and Israel's New York smart cities, which, by the way, Derek, I might even have that up tonight. Derek just finished an article on the smart city discussion. But think about this. One of the guys involved with specifically the aspect of the Charles Lieber tie, who is involved with the panel that made these decisions that led to where we are. This is the kind of stuff that doesn't prove, like, that's important to recognize. Just the connections don't necessarily prove what we're saying, but the idea that these connections are there are very obvious to me, especially with everything else. And no, I'm not making this to lead to something, to make some grand, you know, epiphany, but at the end of the day, what we need to recognize is this has been a long seed. This goal has been long stated. They've been driving at this for a long time. They've been updating information quietly. And now all of a sudden we're seeing this massive surge of nanotechnology achieving literally everything that they're laying out in these previous documents. So the question is whether or not COVID-19 was just simply the chosen opportunity, or it was something that was being used or created. I don't know why that's something we're afraid to ask with how many times they've done something like this before. Now, finally, this is from another document. I'll show you the title in a moment. I just want to read to you what it says. This is from another UN discussion. This is from 2019. It says, "We face a new species of technology." Very weird way to put that, don't you think? "Those that are increasingly digitized, enabled, and converge with each other, and that are harnessed in cyberspace. This new species of technologies essentially exploits the data captured from physical and biological systems. Almost all physical and biological matter today can be turned into a digital blueprints of or binary code, from the genomes of humans and living organisms to organs and fingerprints, to do-it-yourself drone designs, to nuclear power plant parts, even to brain waves and nanobots delivering tailored molecules in human bodies. Converging technologies therefore create networks of digital information that enhance, run, shape, and integrate cyberspace with daily ways of living. They slowly invade bodies and cities, and they become digitized. Converging technologies also become more decentralized, beyond state control, and available to a wider range of actors around the world. The new geopolitics of converging risks, the UN and prevention of the era of AI. Too late, I guess. Guess that didn't work. Already here. I don't know why people are not as alarmed as I am about this whole thing, but I very clearly believe that there's something here. And I believe that this is something we should be very alarmed about. Now, leading this into the discussion of that future that's being built, recognize that there's a lot of other things that are popping up right now in the midst of all of this. This is brand new. This is from March 17th. This is not science fiction. Israeli researchers have grown an embryo outside the womb. Now, let me ask you why this would be happening in the middle of all of this, right? I mean, we've talked about people cloning sheep 10 years ago. This has been possible for quite a long time. So why now is it being promoted in a positive way, despite that I think it was the Chinese guy who did this and then got like arrested for it? So it's weird that, of course, Israel's now doing it and leading the charge in something that they were aggressively trying to lead the charge in. I just think that there's a lot happening around this whole new, the biological crossover to this in this regard is very alarming to me. Because what we're talking about is the use of the same technological advances, but we're talking about a crossover here in regard to exactly what they're outlining in the convergence of these technologies. But the fact that it's happening in real time during all of this is just not a coincidence. I just don't see how it can be. Or as I pointed out a moment ago, Daily Mail saying, could dimming the sun help cool the earth? Well, Bill Gates wants to spray millions of tons of chalk into the stratosphere to reflect sunlight and slow global warming. But critics fear it could be disastrous. Isn't it funny how it was, you know, whatever, the point that we're talking about global warming, but at the same time, we're seeing all sorts of different varying temperatures. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. But at the end of the day, this is not new. This is why I find this to be very alarming, because they have openly already been doing this, right? Here's a study from November 2018. First sun dimming experiment will test a way to cool the earth. So why are they gaslighting us? Why are they pretending that Bill Gates is only just now offering a new idea? Because they want you to think it's new and not recognize that they've been using nanotechnology and all sorts of other things to do this for a long time. It's alarming that that's something that we're pretending isn't happening. Sort of like pretending the Palestine never existed. There's a lot of things we know that we pretend aren't real. Now, one last note before I bring this into more about COVID-19. I've covered Vandana Shiva in the past. more than once in regard to Monsanto, but it's been a long time. And at the end of the day, there's a lot of misinformation and character assassinations of this person. As I always say, the information is what matters, and every single thing she says in regard to these topics are easily verifiable. So that's what should matter. Now, in my opinion, I think she's very credible, and I think what she's doing is fighting against a system that we're now overtly becoming aware of, all of us. She's been fighting this for decades, or at least a decade. So here's what she has to say specifically about Monsanto, but then even more specifically about Bill Gates' involvement with that. Now, think about glyphosate, think about nanotechnology, think about how all this is going, genetically modified organisms, all this leads together.
So Monsanto came illegally, didn't take any approval, with the promise that they would increase farmers' incomes and have this magical technology to control pests. Well, the bollworm is now resistant. Farmers are in debt. Farmers are committing suicide. The area has been ruined. The pollinators are gone. There's no pollinator. The groundwater is gone. So there's nothing about the ecosystem. So I save seeds.
They destroyed the environment under the guise of helping them feed the environment. The argument was the GMOs would increase their food supply. It devastated them. Why is that not a big story? Because the media is a bunch of hack liars that do what they're told.
We brought organic cotton seeds back. We work with the Gandhi ashrams on hand spinning and hand weaving of this organic cotton. The economy in the villages where we work has jumped tenfold because now the wealth is staying in the village.
Exactly. And this is the other point, is that they decide to buck the system and do it themselves, and now they're flourishing. But before, they're pretending like we're helping, but all you're doing is outsourcing things and pulling, draining resources to other outside entities. And that's what always happens. And we know this. Again, we know this. So that means at a huge level, there are people that are allowing and willing to allow this because of their benefit, because of the profit. So human life means nothing to these people. Now, a lot of people just believe what they're told about it. The point is, we need to recognize how naive that is today.
Rather than being siphoned off as Monsanto's profit, and I read a new study, work has jumped tenfold because now the wealth is staying in the village rather than being siphoned off as Monsanto's profit. And I read a new study that says because we've saved seeds, we brought local seeds that can be saved back into the economy, Monsanto has lost 11 million.
I want to get to your latest book because you widen, I would say, your attacks.
You know why I really don't like the first, this guy's just not good in general, but I just hate the mainstream. So she just made a very relevant point right there that shouldn't just be left to hang. He had that question in mind before she even started answering the other question, right? Okay, now I just want to deviate from that and talk about something else, which is also important, but for crying out loud, guy, do your job. Like, that's huge what she just said.
It's not only Monsanto and the likes, but also others. You attack the what you describe as the billionaire dictators, especially one man, I should say, Bill Gates, who you describe as the Christopher Columbus, I'm quoting you, of modern times. And that's not a compliment, obviously.
Not a compliment if you understand the truth of that history. But you also recognize this is October 23rd, 2019. So this is right before everything started.
Whose mission is to impose, quote-unquote, genetically modified organisms and digital dictatorship to small farmers across the world.
Isn't
Bill
that interesting?
Gates, who's donated billions to improve public health in poor countries.
Digital dictatorships. What do you know?
And so on. You're saying, essentially, he's a dictator and he's there not to help, but to make people poorer, more dependent.
Well, Bill Gates is actually continuing the work of Monsanto because Monsanto had so many movements and we held a tribunal on Monsanto. A buyer bought up Monsanto, but when Bill Gates pours money into Africa for feeding the poor in Africa and preventing famine, what's he doing? He's pushing the failed green revolution. He's pushing chemicals, pushing GMOs, pushing patents. And yep. Now pushing new...
Knowingly, or he thinks it's a good thing and he may be wrong.
Well, there's
it's not
enough,
the same thing.
There's enough evidence of what it does. There are enough letters to him from farmers of Africa,
yep.
From governments of Africa to say, This is not the way to go. The United Nations accepts agroecology, working with ecological systems, as the best way to go. Now, Bill Gates is trying very hard to shift the patenting issue now to digital. So you just take a genomic map and you say, my invention, you don't create a seed. Seed is self-organized, self-making, and evolution in continuity.
Think about how relevant it is to talk about the fact that they're trying to digitize a natural process. Think about what's happening right now. Like, it's just crazy. So what they're talking about is the fact that they're moving these patents digital, or the idea that they're trying to take something that's a natural process, like a seed, and reproducing that seed into something that you then have to buy from a company. This is everything that's happening right now. This is the Great Reset. This is where it's all going. You own nothing. It's crazy how much this has been happening. And right now, whatever they're doing in the ham-fisted way they've jammed in this agenda, it's exposing exactly what she's talking about.
Just by making a map, a genome, and you have no idea what the seed does. And this is something he's pushing very, very hard. My book records how he financed DivSeq. I've talked about how he's pirated seeds we have saved. Mm-hmm. That tolerates salt and floods. And he says invention, this biopiracy is a bit like Columbus, where Columbus is supposed to have discovered America when he basically went as a pirate. Why do I call him today's Columbus? Because he's carving out new colonies. Software should have stayed open software.
So you say he has a strategy, a nefarious strategy, which you describe as philanthrocapitalism.
I really take issue with his arbitrary the effort. Of, you know, she didn't say nefarious. Now, yes, what she described could be heard and taken as nefarious. I would argue it's nefarious, too, based on just the facts. But she didn't say nefarious. So he's putting words on this that make it into an emotional argument. When really what she said is, here are the this is a crime. If you believe a person committing a crime under the guise of doing good is nefarious, then sure, call it nefarious, because it is nefarious. But the point of him saying that's what she said is frustrating, but that's how the media does this.
Is a nefarious enterprise. And so you're not saying he's using the wrong methods. He's pursuing a wrong goal with self-interest. You also attack Mark Zuckerberg,
attack,
the founder
right?
of Facebook.
Instead of exposed.
They're all linked together. I mean, this reeks a bit of conspiracy theory, doesn't it?
Well, you know, my book.
I mean, what does that even mean? What does that mean? She's laying out facts that you can look up. And because, it's one of those topics that we're supposed to not talk about. Well, it reeks of that word that we're supposed to use to ignore things. That's it. That is fundamentally ignorant. Especially when you're talking to someone as educated and sourced as Vandana Shiva.
Book is based on the new evidence that's coming
exactly.
out. Exactly. All you have to do is see the ownership, and I have data.
See, think about this in regard to COVID-19. This is the same thing that's happening. She's been exposing the facts around this for years and gets dismissed as a conspiracy theorist as she's pointing to scientific studies, evidence, data, real world collected data from people on the ground that are living through this, who are starving because of all this. But who cares? We're going to listen to what the local scientists funded by Bill Gates have to say about what they're living over there in another country.
In the book on how there's common ownership, we stopped Mark Zuckerberg from trying to get into Indian agriculture. It was a big mobilization of people who believe in the open internet.
What did he want to do?
Well, you know, basically what they do is they mine the data from the farmers. And right now, all over the world, there's new debates on privacy issues, on the right. data mining. There's new books, a new form of capitalism, which is surveillance capitalism, where you basically have turned human beings into your new raw material.
Surveillance capitalism. You've turned human beings into your new materials. Remember what Whitney had to say? Your body is the new battlefield. I hope this is not being lost on everybody.
Bill Gates does both. He takes living resources and our seeds and biodiversity, mines it into data and wants ownership along with his friends. And Mark Zuckerberg mines your data and your behaviors and turns it into the raw material, both of corporate world for selling things, which is why strange advertisements pop up after you've sent a message to a friend, and manipulating elections. I have a chapter in the book on the hijack of democracy. You have enough data on what happened with Facebook selling data to Cambridge Analytica and how we are popping up with artificial intelligence leaders. This is a major threat to democracy.
So this is why you're calling them billionaire dictators, because you think they're not helping democracy, but actually threatening and even killing it. I mean, isn't this too much?
No, I have grown up in...
Can you just... I mean, that was not even an articulated argument. A bit too much? Don't you think that your organization of those facts are just a little much? This is the mainstream media.
In India.
I mean, for crying out loud, this is French press agency. This is for, excuse me, see, I take that back. It's French, France 24. Very different. But nonetheless, still mainstream media.
That was post-independence. I've grown up in an India that had absolutely no corporations. I've grown up in an India where democracy works. And therefore, when I see the imposition of digital transactions and criminalization of cash between poor people, I basically see this as a dictatorship. I call it digital dictatorship. When I watch, not just in India, but in Africa and other parts of the world, now that we have the data that is showing that native seeds have more nutrition, they produce more food, they have no cost because you don't have to use chemicals, that local biodiversity is the way to feeding the world, in spite of all that evidence, in spite of the evidence in the United Nations, in the FAO, in UNCTAD, every agency, Bill Gates is still imposing and forcing GMOs, which is a failed enterprise. And he's not just imposing GMOs. He's taking what has failed and rejected by governments. My government threw the BT aubergine of Monsanto out. Bill Gates resurrects it in Bangladesh. We rejected the golden rice for solving the problem of blindness. He finances it to continue through Philippines. So he's taking all the failed projects with the wrong thinking that life is like a word program.
Ah, exactly. It's like a program. And as well as the fact that they're taking things that failed, right? Not that they just don't like, but things that have shown real world data to not work and in fact cause the opposite. And they start it somewhere else, right? Think about Dr. Fauci with the dengue fever vaccine in regard to the mRNA discussion and how it killed 600 children. And then they're just doing it here in the United States, right? Sure, you could argue they've developed it further and things are changing. And you could argue that there too. But the reality is that we are not getting the full picture of the information. And we're being tested on right now, as all the data shows. And that's what's happening here. India is being tested on. And other people were as well. People like her are exposing the truth. And this guy just can't wrap his mind around it. In fact, I think it's plainly obvious that she is light years ahead of him in intelligence. But the reality is, he doesn't even want to hear it. He just wants to point out, well, that's kind of conspiracy theory, don't you think?
And can be chopped and cut and pasted when it's an amazing complexity of self-organization through Philippines. So he's taking all the failed projects with the wrong thinking that life is like a word program and can be chopped and cut and pasted when it's an amazing complexity of self-organization. And scientists call it autopoiesis, self-organization, writing your own poetry. That's what life does. He is absolutely ignoring all of this new knowledge that new science is giving us and imposing a failed technology with a huge cost to the planet.
You know what's interesting about that is the idea that we're talking about things that they planned out 20 years ago, right? The where this would go. They had the idea of where they thought the technology was going to go, where they drove it to. But on top of that, there's also been new things that have happened, right? So just like she's saying, they're driving in failed efforts or things that are now shown to be that there are new things that are wildly better, but Bill Gates continues to drive in what he wants to work. So these people have already made choices that they're banking on that have nothing to do with what's best for society or best for the individual, what's best for their agenda.
Only so there can be monopolies and people and farmers aren't free to have their seat.
Exactly.
Well, then, Shiva, obviously, you have strong views, and we're happy that you were able to share them with us. Thank you very much.
What an idiot. This is so frustrating. Strong views. Like, you have no engagement there. You have nothing to say. You can't engage and talk. You're just mindlessly saying things. Oh, that's kind of fake. Doesn't that sound like conspiracy theory? It's like, this is what people want? What's wrong with people? Sorry for giving you data and facts and resources to look at. We're conspiracy theorists over here. Listen to Mr. Guy here, who's going to question everything in regard to, well, I shouldn't even said that, of course. People will make fun of that, but they will question what she's saying as conspiracy theory without engaging in it. Not the same as questioning everything the way that we talk about it, just so we can get that out there. Because the point, as I always say, just on that note, is the idea is about questioning everything at the same time being open to everything, right? That's the whole concept. That just doesn't seem as nice in a one statement concept. But the idea is we question the validity of anything, but we don't dismiss topics either, right? You can only question something once you've looked into it, right? That's the idea. And that's what's so important about all of this. Now, going forward on kind of the way that this seems to be developing, the food infrastructure aspect of this, right? Because remember, what she just discussed is all of this ties together. The GMOs, the control of the food supply chains. And what Christian Westbrook's pointing out is that they know this is coming. They know that historically speaking, we have these ebbs and flows of the temperatures in the planet, right? And we know that we've seen historically huge shortages in food because of that. And so he argues that they see this coming, and that's the impetus for a lot of what they're doing, right? While Bill Gates is buying up all the farmland, while he's trying to use fake meat, make fake baby milk, and all this stuff isn't for their benefit, not for yours, as well as to build back better, right? I recommend you take a listen to this interview because it was a great discussion about a lot of really alarming things. But to bringing this into the discussion of the current supply chain issues, and what that might mean in regard to how they already knew this was coming and didn't tell you. We see a cargo ship, Ever Given is the name. And actually, we'll get the first part. Shouldn't start with this part of it. But so the point of this is a ship, a skyscraper-sized cargo ship, is wedged in the Suez Canal, they say, right now. First time in the history of this canal. And take a quick look at what it actually looks like. Hey, pretty ridiculous. And that's wedged in, and now nobody can get through this canal. And oh, I forgot I wanted to actually bring this up on the map. I'll see if I can share this real quickly. This is important just for us to recognize what the importance of what this location is. Let's get the map up real quick. Okay. Okay. So the Suez Canal is right here. It's the passageway between Egypt and essentially the Horn of Africa, right? Or Africa specifically. But the point is that this is a very important passageway for trade routes. And I argue that is why the US government and its, you know, terrorism supporting allies overthrew Egypt and put someone like Sisi in place, right? Where's my favorite dictator? Trump famously said, right? We're okay with dictators as long as we control them. So they now have control over this. Now, this is the argument of why they want control over the Bab el Mandeb Strait, right? Because alternatively, I don't know why I can't get this pin to drop. There we go. Okay, so this is the Bab el Mandeb Strait. This is the entire reason, in my opinion, why they are starving an entire country, because they want control over this strait. Why, you ask? Well, because this strait on the other side, the Strait of Hormuz, is controlled by Iran. And the argument is that if Iran wanted to, they could shut down this strait, which is a very important strait for the shipping of oil out of Saudi Arabia, because that's where this happens, largely through this strait. So before they can take out Iran, they need control over this strait because they want to be able to go somewhere else. And they need Yemen out of the way to be able to do that. You see how this works? Okay. So because they're going to go after Iran. That's the plan. That's what Israel wants to happen. So before they can do that, they need to make sure they can ensure the flow of oil, right? So what's interesting is they also control this over here, but suddenly in the midst of all of this already seemingly pending food infrastructure issues that they're already saying were happening, we have a ship, which never has happened before, jammed in the Suez Canal that stops a huge, basically the world's shipping of all sorts of things. Now, the reality is if they, instead of going through this canal, now they have to come all the way down around Africa all the way around and all the way up and back through here into this strait and over here if they wanted to come somewhere over here or just continue around Europe. The point being, it adds on weeks and weeks to what they're trying to accomplish. Okay, so back to the point. And it's just that's just really important to understand why that's important, and we're in, especially in regard to the Yemen discussion. But now you can see that it's, you know, the way it's jammed in there is very strange. Now, I find this to be very suspect for a lot of reasons. First of which, it turns out before that even happened, the cargo ship Ever Given, and this isn't the Evergreen is the company, they drew, or at least the argument is, what their path took left the shape of a penis in the Red Sea before being stuck in the Suez Canal. Now here, you can see it right here. And I'll show you it on the video as well. Now what it says tracking data shows that the ship Ever Given, operated by the company Evergreen, opted for a phallic-shaped passage while moving along the Suez Canal. But at some point, was carried off its saucy course, as the narrative goes, by a gust of wind. But here's what I find interesting. First of all, going back to this, here's where they're stuck, okay? I think we can plainly see that you can't do a 360 or may even come close to making that shape in this location. Now, could they have made this further back before it got into this very small area? Yes. But arguably, that's not what happened. So my point is, why is it being reported as happening in the Suez Canal? Just weird. Right. Just so you're right off the bat, I'm not trying to say that this necessarily means anything. I just want to point out all the information around this and then give you my opinion on why I find this to be strange, because this is one of the things I find the most strange. More than one person has called this out as conspiracy theory, right? A spokeswoman person for the maritime tracking site Vessel Finder, which shared the penis resembling route, said the data was no joke. It says there's no room for some kind of conspiracies or false data. Okay, what does that even mean? What exactly is the conspiracy theory here? No one is arguing that that somehow means something in regard to this happening. So why are they preemptively coming out hot, going, whoa, it's not conspiracy? What is the theory? That they drew a penis in the ocean? What does that even mean? So I'm very, immediately my gut tells me there's something going on here. What that means is, again, I don't know. But here's my thought. The fact that this happened, I question whether, one, how in the world they could have possibly gotten stuck in that location, right? As because of the fact that, one, they're currently there and they're still in communication with everybody. And the reporting is going, well, we don't know for sure what ultimately happened. It could have been a gust of wind, or they could have lost power. Okay, so why do we not know? Can you not ask them? Do they not know? I mean, there's a really weird, it's sort of like the reporting about AstraZeneca. Well, they may have released outdated data. Did they or not? We're well past the point where we could clearly know, right? But all they ever did was report they may have done this. It may have been cherry picking. May have been? That's pathetic. Okay. So here we are at a point where we're talking about this and we're acting like we don't know. How likely is it, one, they lost power and then got a huge gust of wind enough to move this skyscraper-sized ship to end up like this, and then we don't know for sure whether that's what happened, right? Is it possible this was meant to happen for the very purpose of creating an infrastructure problem or a supply chain issue? Certainly possible, as they've been building up this anticipation for what's coming in the supply chain issues and why everything's suddenly having a problem. Certainly possible. I don't know that for sure. But then we add this back into the mix. Okay, so why would a ship do that? Now, first of all, the question you ask yourself is that something you do by accident? I don't think so. My opinion, you could think about it for yourself. But where were we? Okay, so but looking at this, going to this specifically, we can see how this goes. We can see this is the ship right here, the Ever Given. They've already made the top part, and you can just see how it just kind of you could argue that it was mulling around, and then it just accidentally made that shape, or you could kind of recognize that it's making a shape. Right? Guys, I mean, there's no way anybody honest can pretend that that's not intentional. Now, is it possible it could have been an accident? Sure. But then it gets stuck in a canal in a very weird way. To me, this is just an opinion. Is it possible that this is something that was done for the very reason because they knew they were about to get stuck? I mean, this is not what somebody does when they have a time-sensitive delivery or have a specific thing to meet. Completely theoretical, just my opinion. Now, also interesting is the fact that we see this ship, and you can go back to this one as well, the Amber Arrow. There's a ship called the Mosheheb II. It's an Egyptian ship that seems to comes up right alongside this one up here for some reason, does so with a bunch of ships, but also seems to go right alongside the main ship we're talking about for a period of time. You can see it here, by the way. Here's the Mosheb going along the Costco galaxy. Here it is, standing still for a minute before it gets stuck in the canal, doing something. Now, actually, it looks like they, I think they stopped for a minute. I don't know what that means. Interesting, nonetheless. To me, there's a lot around this that suggests there's something else going on. Now, then they proceed to kind of circle and then eventually go back in. Now, you could argue the circles could have just randomly done that. Certainly possible. Now, that's not even the real point. The point is, why were they milling around in that area before going forward? There could be an explanation. These are all just hypotheticals. Here's the ship that's currently stuck. Oops, I just hit, hold on. Oh, wait, maybe it got out already. I don't think so. Trying to follow the story, it does not appear to be. Nope, it's right there. Okay, still stuck. Now, here is the other ship, the Mosheb II. Information for you to continue to look into if you can find something more out about it. Now, here is the what this seems to be developing into. Why are there toilet paper shortages around the world? Right? This was March 21st. Before this happened. Now, why are there already shortages? Right? That's what they're asking. Doesn't seem to be an answer. Why are there actually shortages? Because recognize, guys, there, yes, this whole arbitrary lockdown of our world because of something that's not really as dangerous as they make it out to be. Yeah, it has an effect on things. The world is still functioning, though. People are still making toilet paper. Companies are still selling things. This is still happening. So how in the world are we arguing that we're having specific shortages exactly like we happened last time? There was no explanation for why it happened last time. There was all of a sudden shortages, which made no sense whatsoever in the beginning of this. But the point is that this continues to be pointed out. New surges of this is just toilet paper, but it gets into much more. Half of the global population will face water shortages by 2050. They're kind of seeding you with this idea of how things are becoming short and losing supply. This is in regard to cars, lack of microchips, seat foam, deepening. Now, this is what I find interesting. This is the 22nd, and it says deepening shortages of key auto parts such as microchips and seat foam are combining with packed ports and a cargo crunch. So we were already talking about a cargo crunch before that ship got stuck. Does that make sense? Because that didn't seem to be happening before that. But now we can't even make cars, apparently. Doesn't that seem to align, interestingly, with what they want to accomplish? The current supply chain issues represent an unusual combination of factors, including shipping constraints, chip shortages, and rising consumer demand. I wonder where all the chips are going. Well, here it says, California's two U.S. senators are urging President Joe Biden to set a firm date for, wait a minute, phasing out gas-powered vehicles. What does that have to do with this? Oh, I guess it's just showing you that just serendipitously it just happened. What we want to happen is automatically happening because of some totally natural organic shortage. And then we add a huge of ship that gets wedged in between the Suez Canal, which makes that even more obvious. So is it going to have a dramatic effect on whether you can buy a car or whether you can fix your car? Yeah, I mean, it just seems ridiculous how all of these things, the byproducts, amount to what they already wanted to do. You're being gamed, I think, people. Global, and then it brings us to the 25th, which is today, global container crunch. So recognize that before that thing got stuck, we're talking about the same concept of a cargo crunch. Here we're on a container crunch, deepens with cargo ships. And remember, it says deepens with strands in the canal. A year of pandemic, ports battled COVID in 2020, and now freight crunch 2021, before that gets stuck. There's something really strange going on here. At the end of the day, this, in my opinion, is very clearly leading to a situation that can be used. As always, could it be organic? Sure, certainly possible. But along with the weird, whatever that thing was doing before it went in, whatever they were discussing before it stopped to go through the canal, whatever ultimately happened while it was going through the canal that we somehow can't manage to figure out, even though it's been stuck for days, is ridiculous. Now, on top of that, recognize that what they're saying is that this is already impacting supply chains. They're arguing that this thing getting stuck for 2 days is already seeing real world results. Does anybody believe that? You're telling me that the stuff on that container was going to get to where it was going to go in 2 days? Nobody can buy. That's ridiculous. So the fact that they're arguing this is having an effect in 2 days or 3 days or a week should immediately make you recognize that that was going to be the agenda regardless. I just don't understand how they can pretend like that is already having an effect on whether you can buy toilet paper at the store 3 days later. It's apparent to me. But I do believe this is going to be used like Christian Westbrook was talking about, that they already see where this is going, and whether it's artificially created to get us in a certain position or however you want to look at it, this is going to be used. And we will be put in a position where we are even more reliant on a government that has been very clear that they don't care about you or what you care about at all. And speaking of that, getting into the hospital discussion, this is something that will probably unnerve quite a few people and you know, be vindicating for most all of them, actually. Now, this is NHS University Hospitals Plymouth. Now, there's a lot of links in here you could look at that I still need to look at all. Here is what this is: University Hospitals Plymouth, the NHS Trust. University Hospitals Plymouth NHS Trust, formerly known as Plymouth Hospitals NHS Trust, is the organization which runs Dereford Hospital and the recently co-located Royal Eye Infirmary, as well as the Child Development Center. The trust is an NHS trust, so, you know, the government, that provides secondary health services in Plymouth and surrounding areas. So it looks like 3 to 4 locations. At the end of the day, we're ultimately really talking about the Dereford Hospital, but just recognize what this term, the trust, means and what it implies. So some of the links down here that we looked at, this is one of the ones that Whitney and I were talking about, she shared this with me, are Freedom of Information Acts disclosures. Now, as it says here, that they're just providing all this information for you to look over. If relevant, we need permission to inform the owners. Where was the point in here? Just basically saying this information that people requested, and here it is for you. So here's what this has to say. This is asking about deaths due to COVID-19 since March 2020. And in this location. Oh, and that's actually right. By the way, before we even get into this, I want you to recognize that this is a location that has been hyped up quite a bit. A number of people in Dereford Hospital after testing positive for COVID doubles in a week. I just grabbed a few first couple that I saw. Almost 200 Dereford Hospital staff off due to COVID-19. NHS confirms 10 new COVID deaths at Dereford Hospital. There's a bunch of them. Like, the point is, it's not somewhere where this wasn't happening or they weren't treating people in the hospital. Okay. This is a place that very clearly, at least we're told, had a big COVID issue. Okay. So, coming back to this point, they're asking about deaths due to COVID-19 since March 2020. So just from March, and just generally deaths from COVID-19. But as it asks, please enlighten me with the number of COVID deaths in Dereford Hospital since this pandemic began, not positive cases or admissions, just deaths due to COVID-19 and not with COVID-19 or 28 days of a positive test. It says, the trust considers 5 or fewer deaths were related to patients who died following a positive COVID-19 test result that did not have a pre-existing condition. Now, this shouldn't be too shocking to people because the CDC admitted this quietly as well, saying 6% of the total were people that had only COVID-19. And yet we still pretend like we're all in danger. Right? The idea is over 80, all of these comorbidities, like even in general, that it aligns with natural mortality. There's Swiss policy research to the study. Multiple people pointed this out, that basically your risk of this is about the same risk you have of going outside your front door. That is a fact. According to the studies, according to multiple research and multiple researchers finding this case, and this is just publicly, and you can look this up. The average age is about 78. The point being that that's currently about the average age of death for people. So it aligns perfectly with normal mortality. But what they're telling you there is that only possibly zero, by the way, because all it says is it considers five or fewer related to patients who died following that and did not have a pre-existing condition. Then it says University Hospitals Plymouth NHS Trust takes the view. So they're saying this is their opinion that the actual number requested is too low to be disclosed. That's even more on the point. They're saying it's below five then. So it's too low to even be disclosed. Why would that be? Well, the information is considered exempt from further supply in accordance with section 41(1)(a) and B of the 2000 Act. So your government in UK made a law that made this exempt from being disclosed. Why would that be? Now it says the trust received the information in confidence and it cannot be shared, even with the Freedom of Information Act, because we know how that's totally legitimate. That works all the time. They're telling you that people who died from COVID-19 since March with no other pre-existing conditions is at least less than five. At least less than five. So explain that. So how we can see all this, 200 people dying, oh my God, it's ever, as we're staring at the numbers of less than five, and they admit it, that it's too low to be disclosed. It gets better or worse. It goes forward. Another one asks about deaths due to COVID without pre-existing conditions since March 2020. Okay, so more specific, or I guess more broad, but either way you look at it, how many people have died in your hospitals from COVID-19 alone? As in, they only died due to COVID-19. I can see the figures that you publish online, but these deaths within 28 days of a positive test, so they could have died from other causes. I just want to know the exact figure from 1st of February 2020 until December 20th of people that have died due to COVID-19 and not anything else, please. Again, the trust considers five or fewer deaths related to patients without a pre-existing condition. University Hospitals Plymouth takes the view that the actual number requested is too low to be disclosed. Like, this is, there's no way to misunderstand what they're saying. And then it goes on to say the same thing, that they can't acknowledge. They can't, because the government is tied their hands. They can't do it. Right. Okay. So the next one. Even more. This is the number of deaths as a result of COVID from February to December, right? So basically the entire thing, not just from March, but the entirety. Be grateful if you could provide the number of deaths. And I mean, the point is the same thing. Clarification. My request is for the number of people who have died as a result of COVID, not the numbers of people who died in hospitals in England and tested for positive. Same thing. And guess what? The trust considers five or fewer deaths. It's the same concept, guys. Okay. So what we're seeing here, I believe that was, oh, that's right, before I even get to that, is this hospital, by essentially being forced to by Freedom of Information Act, is admitting that on record they have less than five, and that because it's too low to even be disclosed, they can't even tell you. How does that make sense in a pandemic? How does that make sense in a location that's saying that they're overrun and that their people are leaving and that the entire staff is on leave because of COVID, and less than five people have actually died there in regard to COVID-19 without having some other condition that could be justified? Somebody's saying, I'll need a link for that, please. Well, as always, Reborn, you know where to find it. It is. It will be in the discussion in the article page once we're done. It's just incredible to me. And guys, again, I almost did it again. I almost forgot to put it back up. There is a lot here to look over. Links, maternity restrictions, risk assessment. I haven't looked over all these, but this is everywhere, right? This is what it, this is actual information. This is not what governments say, what the media reports. This is real world information, right? This is like showing you the science, as they say, something opposite while citing the science, right? We are showing you the actual information and being dismissed as conspiracy theorists. Recognize how crazy that is. This hospital has claimed to be all sorts of things, and they're admitting that they do not have the evidence, or that rather they aren't even allowed to show you because it's so low. And I find it odd that this is from the year 2000. What is the benefit of, I mean, I can tell you right now, they don't want you to be able to know this stuff if they're trying to hide this kind of thing, which seems to suggest they've been doing this kind of scam for a long time. And then, oh, and basically this was an interesting point to a different question. I don't even find the question to be, the answers they give basically say, we don't know, we don't have the information, but this is an interesting thing they admit here. especially going back to the point about hospital beds and doubles in a way, all the claims, right? About we're over, the hospital beds are over capacity and blah, blah, blah. Well, here's what they ask. Can you confirm the bed capacity in COVID-specific wards, which have been reserved and or occupied for sole purposes of COVID patients? Because the argument is, there's two things here, that they keep saying that where hospitals are overrun. But what that really amounts to is the ICU where they're being treated for COVID specifically, which basically amounts to maybe 15, maybe 20 beds at the most. So when you talk about the hospitals overrun, that's not really what's happening. Everything, most everything is shut down because of COVID, despite the fact that that's not even the argument, that it's not even as dangerous. And the point is that you're hurting far more people by not allowing more treatment elsewhere. Or at least that's the argument too, because I argue that medical treatment is, it is the third largest killer in this country. But that's, you know, different discussion. The point is that that in and of itself is sort of a deception. But then we find out when they ask this question, here's how this hospital answered. There is no set number of beds. Bed need is assessed daily and then capacity simply flexed to respond to the demand. Okay, so what does that show us? That this whole beds over capacity thing is a manufactured illusion. If the rest of the hospital's empty, and what they're telling us, and we could argue that most hospitals probably have something similar, all they needed to do was expand their capacity, flex it out to locations that it wasn't. I'm sure some of them did, but by and large, we found out that some of these overcapacity locations were simply using 15 beds. How much of this needs to be orchestrated and manipulated and manufactured before we begin to see how clearly dishonest this entire thing is? Which brings us to one of the biggest lies of this whole thing, which seems in conjunction with the masks and the PCR test are one of the largest reasons this is being one of the most important components, let's say, to their illusion. Now, I already told you this article. The data shows lockdowns end more lives than they save for mainstream media. For it's just funny how we're still being dismissed and deleted as this stuff is clearly being pushed out. The point, as always, is they want their people to say it. They want it to be breaking news when CNN says it, not when we say it 6 months ago, right? But here's the point. This is a great article from Off Guardian. Lockdown 1 year on. It doesn't work. It never worked. And by the way, it wasn't supposed to work. And this is a great article that really nails this point. So we come to March 23rd and the lockdown's first birthday, or as we call it here, the longest 2 weeks in history. Well played. This was not a sacrifice for the greater good. It was not a hard decision with arguments on both sides. It was not a risk-benefit scenario. The risks in regard to lockdown were in fact certainties. Remember, just like I told you back in the beginning, and the benefits entirely fictional because lockdowns don't work. It's really important to remember that. Even if you subscribe to the belief that SARS-CoV-2 is a unique, discrete entity, which is far from proven, or that it is incredibly dangerous, which is demonstrably untrue, the lockdown has not worked to in any way limit the supposed threat. It says they don't make any difference. The curves don't flatten and the RO number doesn't drop and the lives aren't saved. Quite the opposite, as we've all seen. And look at the graphs they share. The first ones comparing COVID deaths in the UK with had lockdowns to Sweden didn't have lockdowns. And what do you know? The UK's worse. Shocking. But let's pretend like that's not a very important thing to point out. Or this one comparing COVID deaths in California who had lockdowns and Florida who didn't. And what do you know? California is higher. Like, it's just so stupid how there's a lot of examples of this. And we don't want to acknowledge it, or some of us do. From Belarus to Sweden to Florida, Nicaragua to Tanzania, the evidence is clear. COVID, whatever that means in real terms, is not impacted by lockdowns. But that is, and what's important, what they said there, whatever that means in real terms, right? So you might even want to make the argument that lockdowns do stop viruses from spreading, but maybe it's because we're not dealing with that. That's not what I'm saying. I wholeheartedly believe that lockdowns do not have even close to the effect they think they do. And in fact, I believe they know they have the effect that we are currently seeing. The same reason I think they know that masks cause the effects that they do. And that's why all of these choices were made and all of them lead to more problems, more illness, more reasons they can use to create this illusion. My opinion, but it's backed up by the facts and the data that you can look at that I've shown you over and over and over. The damage done by shuttering businesses, limiting access to healthcare, postponing treatments and diagnoses, postponed surgeries, increasing depression, soaring unemployment, and mass poverty has been discussed to death. The scale of the impact cannot be overstated. and as I played many times, as Dr. David Nabarro, World Health Organization Special Envoy for COVID-19, said of the lockdowns back in October.
I want to say it again. We in the World Health Organization do not advocate lockdowns as a primary means of control of this virus. The only time we believe a lockdown is justified is to buy you time to reorganize, regroup, rebalance your resources, protect your health workers who are exhausted. But by and large, we'd rather not do it. Just look at what's happened to the tourism industry, for example, in the Caribbean or in the Pacific, because people aren't taking their holidays. Look what's happened to smallholder farmers all over the world because their markets have got dented. Look what's happening to poverty levels. It seems that we may well have a doubling of world poverty by next year. We may well have at least a doubling of child malnutrition because children are not getting meals at school and their parents in poor families are not able to afford it. This is a terrible, ghastly global catastrophe, actually. And so we really do appeal to all world leaders. Stop using lockdown as your primary control method. Develop better systems for doing it. Work together and learn from each other. But remember, lockdowns just have one consequence that you must never, ever belittle, and that is making poor people an awful lot poorer.
Well, I've played that many times. And yes, I finally clipped out that first part, but it's concise. It's exact. It is not what we should be doing in regard to the primary means. Of course, that's a little deviation, but that's what's happening. All these governments are smelling or even hearing about the possible, you know, there might be a variant that might come next week, possibly from that country. Lockdown, everybody lockdown, just in case that thing might eventually be dangerous one day down the line. It's ridiculous. And I'm obviously overblowing that a bit, but the reality is that's what's happening. That's why Germany, Merkel, just got pushed back into place because she was going to lock down over Easter in the most extreme way they've ever done based on the possibility a variant might be a threat. That's what they're trying to build. And she just pulled the trigger a little too soon, I would say. But as he said, it's a terrible global catastrophe. The lockdowns, a doubling of child malnutrition. But that's all good, right? It's okay we can increase teen suicide by 100% and a doubling of childhood malnutrition and making poor people an awful lot poorer because that works perfectly with their other agendas. So who cares? The pandemic didn't do that. It says lockdowns did that. And that's the point. They keep pretending like all the damaging side effects of their solution are caused by COVID-19. But that's just an ignorant fallacy. We all see that. The virus didn't cause poor people to get poorer. The actions around that did. And you could argue they did that for our best interest, but that doesn't matter. You can't pretend COVID caused these things. That's a simple, dishonest claim. They were never going to achieve their stated aims. What it says, and what's more, they were never intended to achieve those aims. Too often, soft language in the media talks about misjudgments or mistakes or incompetence. Supposed critics claim the government panicked or overreacted. This is what we were just talking about. This is nonsense. The easiest, cheesiest excuse that has ever existed. Whoops, they say, with an emphatic shrug and S-eating grin. I guess we done messed up. Unflattering, but better than the truth. Because the truth is that the government isn't mistaken or scared or stupid. They're malign, dishonest, they're cruel. And the suffering of lockdown was entirely predictable, as we pointed out as well, and deliberately imposed for reasons that have nothing to do with helping people and everything to do with controlling them. It's been more than apparent for most of the last 52 weeks that the agenda of lockdown was not public health, but laying the groundwork for the new normal, the great reset. It's readily apparent. And on top of that, by the way, you can check out a huge compilation from the Fat Emperor or Ivor Cummings of scientific analyses and papers on lockdown effectiveness. Now, here you have 34 different studies and papers around lockdown lack of efficacy and analysis. But let's keep pretending like we don't know because we haven't done it, right? They will say that until they get the result they want from the people they funded. To say that there's no science around this is simply a lie. Just like they lied about the mask information, they lied about all of it because they knew most of the people that they were trying to manipulate, the lowest common denominator, have never even read a scientific study in their life. And what I mean clearly is not you guys in the chat, but the lowest common denominator, the average ignorant masses out there that blindly follow what they're told. All they need is that small percentage of people and point to them as the majority because they're the most vocal, uninformed people out there. The ones that think they know everything, right? And that's very common. The people that are charged up with absolute certainty are the ones that scream the loudest. Now, I'm trying to remember actually a quote that I appreciate with that. What is it? Hold on, I'm just going to look it up real quick. A great quote, and I can't believe I forget it. It's one of my favorites. Bertrand Russell. The whole problem with the world is that fools and fanatics are always so certain of themselves and wiser people so full of doubts. It's a great quote, and it really does hit home. But on top of the 34, there's also 18 huge or big studies of huge harm papers, he puts it. There's basically studies that show that there are harms to lockdown. 18 that show absolute harm, 34 that simply point out the lack of efficacy around what they keep saying is the absolute, while the WHO says we shouldn't be doing it. But we shouldn't counter World Health Organization guidelines, right, guys? I don't know how this is not the most obvious thing of all time. And I wanted to reiterate this before we go to the last point. We just talked about this, but I just can't get past how important this is. Actually, and wait a minute, there was, did I put that off? I think I might have. Well, hold on one second. Yeah, I guess. So what I was actually just thinking for some reason was this one. We also just talked about this. I put it off because I'm not going to get into vaccines specifically today. But this is one that the point is both of these together are very important. Now, this one, what I was just going to show you, is in regard to the PCR test. It's also very important, but these two things together, I might as well just show them together, are monumental for this discussion. One coming from The Lancet, one on PubMed from the NIH National Library of Medicine. Clarifying the evidence in SARS-CoV-2 antigen rapid test in public health. It says, with uncorroborated reports of poor sensitivity, the debate surrounding the use of this with PCR tests, confusing policy makers internationally and potentially stalling deployments. It says, we wish to challenge those interpretations and clarify the evidence. PCR seeks the genetic code of a virus from nose to throat swabs, amplifies it 30 to 40 cycles, which we know is what's creating false positives. There's like fragments of RNA can linger for weeks, often with people who are not symptomatic. What it says is, for public health measures, another approach is needed. Earlier infection, but whether they are infectious today. In our view, current PCR testing is therefore not the appropriate gold standard for evaluating SARS-CoV-2. This is February 17, 2021. Now, aren't these the people telling us to trust the science? So why didn't they immediately start doing something different? Because are they not trusting the science? Are they listening to some other science? Well, no, this is the most recent evaluation of this specifically from one of the leading scientific publications in existence. In no way does that mean I trust them or, you know, the point is that's what they say. And here they are saying that the PCR test is not what we should be using. But I guess they don't trust the science. But we're conspiracy theorists, though. But the other point was how they're telling you that there is not appropriate informed consent around the vaccine. More severe disease that basically COVID vaccines designed to elicit neutralizing antibodies may sensitize vaccine recipients to more severe disease than if they were not vaccinated, which is called antibody-dependent enhancement, should have been and should be prominently and independently disclosed. It's telling you that the informed consent is impossible to meet. Where was it? It says research subjects currently vaccine trials as well as those being recruited. The bottom line is you're not being informed properly. And the science has shown you that this is a risk. The possibility that your body can attack itself based on this vaccine. And the fact that that is real and real world. And they saw it and they proved it and it's possible. And the fact that they then say, well, this needs to be out there. They need to be informed they can sign so we know it's possible. And they're not. That's why they say prominently independently disclosed to research subjects in order to meet the medical ethical standards of patient comprehension for informed consent, which is a law, but they don't care. So ask yourself how all this is possible, right? How we can know it's not the right test, how we can know that we have things that are happening with the vaccines that have been proven with science that do not get talked about and everything else we discussed. And yet here we are. The answer is because these people are lying to you, because all of this is one grand effort to drive in something they've been trying to achieve for decades. Does that mean every single person involved in every aspect is aware of all this? I would argue most not. The vast majority has no idea what's really going on. They're told something they're, you know, it's decentralized from the top down. Think about it like this, where you've got one or a grouping of people that ultimately know everything that's going on. Then beneath them, they have people that also think they know everything that's going on, but they don't really. They know just enough to execute what they need to execute to achieve that level of the plan. Beneath them, the same thing, but even further removed, and so on and so on and so on. So you got people at this level that believe that they're involved with the big plan that have no idea what's really going on. And that's how you have the idea of how can this be happening with so many people and everyone would. Well, that's the classic fallacy. It's very easy, in fact, and they've done it over and over and over, just like they're doing it now. But to finish up, a really disconcerting discussion. Ugh, this just makes me sick. This is a horrifying image of a woman giving birth to a baby and having it behind a plastic sheet. Now, you could argue, first of all, the point of what this woman says, and I'll just play this first. Ugh. God, it makes me sick. It's just so wrong. And now look, what she says here, by the way, is I asked my people and they told me this is a new method, which is totally not verified. Now I've heard both of this in regard to that. This is absolutely not specifically because COVID-19, but let's be clear. Not COVID inspired is not correct. Because it's not, we're doing this because COVID, it doesn't mean it's not COVID inspired. This is because of the new mentality we have today, that we are not human beings living our lives. We're a bunch of dirty, gross, virus carrying vessels, and that we have to protect ourselves from everybody, including our own baby. That's why that's happening. That happened during this whole thing, whether they say it's because COVID or not, and they're going to continue doing it going forward. You should be outraged. Because what they're doing right there is not only does this also challenge World Health Organization guidelines, by the way, which I'll show you. It is a hugely important thing to make a bond between the baby and the mother immediately, to touch skin to skin. It's more important than we can even wrap our minds around, as well as the fact that it has health benefits, as well as the fact that having plastic around a baby just seems like a stupidly counterintuitive thing to do. As well as changing that first world experience it might have that will change the way that it lives. Your experiences, especially right when you're born, have a clear effect on who you are. It seems counterintuitive, wouldn't you say? As I show a sticker, risk of suffocation, plastic bags and films can be dangerous to avoid, keep away from children. But as now we're going to take newborns and put plastic around them, which is ridiculous. But here's UN News. Keep mothers and newborns together, new health research says. But we don't care about new health research. We only care about the illusion of safety around our new biosecurity state, right? And getting mothers to remove themselves from their bond with the people, with the new life they just created, right? Desensitize and dehumanize the connections between these people. Here is the World Health Organization as of March 16th, guys. This is really new. New research highlights the risks of separating newborns from mothers during COVID-19 pandemic. Right, because the point is, it's not COVID-19. Yes, it is. That's what this is happening for, is the separation, and that plastic is just another advancement of that narrative. Now, well, there was a part that I thought I highlighted. Let me see. Maybe it's in the next ones. But in any case, as it says, keeping mothers and babies together could save more than 125,000 lives, according to the WHO. New research from the WHO and partners shows that the COVID-19 pandemic is severely affecting the quality of care given to small and sick newborns, resulting in an unnecessary suffering and deaths. A study by none other than The Lancet highlights the critical importance of ensuring newborn babies have close contact with parents after birth, especially for those born too small. Or low birth weight, or too soon, premature. However, in many countries, if COVID-19 infections are confirmed or suspected, which confirmed does not mean confirmed. It means PCR test. Newborn babies are being routinely separated from their mothers, routinely, putting them at higher risk of death and lifelong health complications. I mean, guys, this is not new information. The simple idea of removing that immediate connection bond between the mother and the baby literally puts them at higher risk of death and lifelong health complications. How are we missing what this is? If the mask is increasing your risk of illness, if the lockdown is dramatically increasing your risk of illness, if this act is increasing your lifelong risk of illness, if spraying glyphosate on everything is increasing the risk of chronic disease, what's the common denominator here? I'm not saying that's a guaranteed causation, but I'm seeing a correlation that cannot be denied. This is especially the case in the poorest countries. Of course it is, where the greatest number of preterm births and infant deaths occur. According to the report, disruptions to kangaroo mother care, which is what they're calling that, which involves close contact between a parent, usually a mother and a newborn baby, will worsen the risks. They also get into discussion about how nurses are ultimately concerned more so about their... Oh, actually, I think I'm jumping that. It might be in this last one. Well, first of all, let me see. Yeah, let me do this one first, because I think I added this last, and that next story is something I've reported on before. But so this is also March 15th, or this one was March 16th. So this is actually before that. Vulnerable newborns being separated from their mothers in COVID-19 pandemic. Now, again, just I want to go back to this again and just point out that it's funny how people are, you know, who's this? Rita Pen- this is 241,000 followers. I thought this was somebody that was... Yes, the Herald Sun, exactly. Mainstream media, right? So a mainstream media person who is saying, I just randomly asked my tweeps, my people on Twitter about this, and they told me it's a new method for C-section births, not COVID. Great reporting, right? So we can't state things without having facts backed up. We'll be censored and fake news, but the mainstream can just state things as fact without actually having anything to back it up. Because my point is, it's obviously COVID. That's what's happening. This is literally what we're talking about. Great job, mainstream media. But what's also funny is if you look at her bio, it says the truth is incontrovertible. Malice may attack it. Ignorance may deride it. But in the end, there it is. Winston Churchill. Priceless. Somebody citing Winston Churchill about truth and honesty doesn't really understand change. It's just funny how... by the way, the truth being incontrovertible, it's just funny how these people like to present themselves. And then she comes out with this, just going, well, people on Twitter said something. Fact. It's embarrassing. It really is. And I know that's not necessarily, this is not some major news report, but remember that they frame the way we tweet in that way. As always, a double standard applied the way that they want to with us, so they can disparage people that are doing their jobs better than they are. But going back to the point, healthcare workers caring for world's small and sick newborns, get this, are stressed by fear of their own health. Oh, what heroes, right? That are worried about putting their... I mean, come on. Look, there are plenty of people that work in this field that are heroes, that do put their lives above other people. But this idea that we're... Of course their lives are... That's what they do for a living. This is like a fireman going, oh, I'm really scared about getting burned in there. Okay, so why are you doing the job that continues to put you at risk of getting burned? It's a stupid thing to say. Of course they're stressed about getting sick by something when they're dealing with what they're told is a pandemic, but that's your job. If you're not willing to put your life at risk to put their health above yours, you're not in the right field. I don't want to do that job, but the point is that there are people that are willing to do so. And the point is that you swore an oath, the Hippocratic Oath. That doesn't mean that at the moment you feel at risk based on a media report, that you can just suddenly take a different action that puts you in safety, but maybe puts them at more risk. That means you're a bad nurse or a bad healthcare person. That's what they're saying, though. Oh, they're stressed out about the fear of their own health, so they're taking different actions. That's what this is talking about. They're separating babies from mothers because they're concerned about their own safety. So they're putting the babies at risk for lifelong illness. They're putting the mother and the baby at risk in general, or specifically the baby in the sense of, you know, not having that connection they need for their own safety. That's the opposite of what doctors and nurses swear that the promise that they'll do. And this says two-thirds, back to the point, no, this isn't COVID-related, two-thirds of 1,120 healthcare workers surveyed worldwide would separate mothers and babies with a positive or unknown COVID status. That's even worse. I was just talking about this a couple of weeks ago, or maybe more, but the idea that what we're seeing right now is that there are people that are going in, whether tested recently or not, and they get tested. And if they're told they have COVID-19, or more specifically, if they're told their PCR test was positive, they will separate the baby from the mother at birth for up to a month. Do you understand how catastrophic that is for the connection and the relationship and the growth of that baby? We just told you what even the World Health Organization is saying. Potential lifelong illness for just doing that. Unknown. So adding to that, they don't even know. So other than a test that says negative, we're going to assume and we're going to separate you. Implementing kangaroo mother care and helping mothers and babies together could save, and this is again, the baby being held by the mother, could save more than 125,000 newborn lives. Do you realize how many numbers we're talking about with COVID-19? Add up all the things we've seen around all of this. If we're talking about 125,000 newborn lives, if we're talking about tens of thousands of teen suicides, if we're talking about all the deaths from cancer and diabetes, God knows what else, or the fact that they're blaming things on other things, this is more damaging exponentially than anything we're talking about with COVID, if that's even what we're really talking about, representing a 65-time decrease risk of newborn death compared to the risk of newborn deaths from COVID. So the point they're making there is that your child is at more risk of dying by removing them from their mother than they are from COVID-19. But we know that already because the CDC continues to tell you they have a 0% chance. But sure, separate them for their safety. Do you really, this is every choice we talk about under COVID-19 is for your safety, but in fact, that choice for your safety puts you in exponentially more danger. Oops, our bad. I guess we're just incompetent. Whoops. Or criminal, right? New research underscores the need for decision makers and providers, particularly in this area, to protect and strengthen care. This is something we know, and they just do it anyway. They do it anyway. Now, here's another point to finish off on this that needs to be taken seriously. I talked about this back in 2010. A miracle mom brings premature baby back to life with 2 hours of loving cuddles after doctors pronounced him dead. Now, imagine that. Imagine they remove the baby behind the plastic sheet and say, oh, he didn't make it. Well, listen to what happened here. It was a final chance to say goodbye for grieving mother Kate Ogg after doctors gave up hope of saving her premature baby. She tearfully told her lifeless son, born at 27 weeks, weighing 2 pounds, how much she loved him and cuddled him tightly, not wanting to let him go. Although then the doctors were aggressively trying, as I've reported this back then, they were trying to take the baby away from her. Now, I'll get more details on that in a second. Although little Jamie's twin sister, Emily, had been delivered successfully, doctors had given Mrs. Ogg the news all mothers dread, that after 20 minutes of battling to get her son to breathe, they had declared him dead. 20 minutes without breathing. Dead. Okay? There's nobody in the world that would disagree with that. Now, and what this needs to show you is how fundamentally we don't understand what's going on here. Having given up on a miracle, Mrs. Ogg unwrapped the baby from his blanket and held him against her skin. Okay, she takes the blanket off. There's a better picture of this in the other one I saw where you could see where she had the skin to skin. That's the important part here. Okay, held him and it says, and then an extraordinary thing happened. After 2 hours of being hugged and not breathing, touched and spoken to by his mother, the little boy began showing signs of life. At first, it was just a gasp for air that was dismissed by doctors as a reflex action. And then the startled mother fed him a little breast milk on her finger and he started breathing normally. A short time later, he opened his eyes. It was a miracle. Then he held out his hand and grabbed her finger. He opened his eyes and moved his head from side to side. The doctor kept shaking his head and saying, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. Now, here's the real story. The sad part of this is that the doctors now, and I would even argue that it makes sense, right? From a doctor's perspective, if what you are taught to understand, and this again speaks to not thinking outside the box, but only doing what you are not to do. It's been 20 minutes. It's been an hour. Mrs. Ogg, you know, you're almost obligated to go. We can't just let you, you know, if we're talking about a dead body, it's a sad story, but right, as a doctor's perspective, it comes to a point. Do you let it go 3 hours, 4 hours? I mean, it becomes to be an issue, and anyone could understand that. But my point is, it's the doctors continued to say, Mrs. Ogg, we need to take the child. And she refused. This was talked about in the other article more than once. And she said, no, no, no. And then but this at a moment when the baby was not breathing, understand. For whatever reason, they let it go for 2 hours and it comes back to life. So how do we explain not breathing for 2 hours? How do we explain any of this? We're not talking about some assumption. These are doctors in a hospital that checked for the breathing, that checked for the heartbeat, got nothing. In fact, we're trying to make it breathe. The point, guys, is there is a next level reality about what skin to skin contact, and especially between a mother and a newborn child, can do. What it will do, and depriving people of that is catastrophic, not just for the baby, not just for the mother, but for the structure of our society, for crying out loud. But what else are they not? What are they not trying to attack and undermine right now? This story really does get to me. It really does. It's a great story. But the sad thing is what happens? What if she would have just trusted what the doctor said? Right? What happens if they would have at any given point been like, okay, you're right. No, she felt something. She knew something was happening, and it continued to build until she brought this baby back to life. It just gives you chills. So as we continue to change these kind of things, recognize that this one puts a lot more power in the arms of the medical industry to decide for you what your next action should be, as well as depriving this baby of much needed contact. It makes me sad knowing what's possible. But to end on a not so much somber note, and this one first is actually pretty crazy, but the next one will probably make you laugh. This is in the Netherlands. This is a guy not wearing a mask in a store who is confronted by a security guard, right? Not a police officer. And he is physically manhandled with another, you know, good Samaritan. In fact, really a mindless propaganda believer that's doing, you know, that believes this person should have his right to shop taken away because he's not mindlessly putting cloth over his face. And this is what they do to him physically. And remember, not a police officer. This guy should make a huge deal about this.
Hey, is he now maandenlang here?
Right? Think about this. It's all about getting his stuff away, right? You're not allowed to shop without a mask, right? Meanwhile, we're doing things explicitly we're not supposed to because it spreads things, right? Oh, you have to stay 6 feet apart because it makes this worse. So are you not doing exactly what you think you're trying to stop him from doing? No, it's all about compliance, guys. You're not allowed to shop without a mask. That's not fair. We don't get to, so you don't get to. It's like we're all children all of a sudden. Yeah, but let's get real close and manhandle him and touch everything, because that seems much more safe than just having this guy shop alone 6 feet away from everybody and check out and leave, right? And why is this guy stepping in? I mean, this is so insulting. This guy, Mr. Social Justice Warrior over here, believes that he has to do the right thing because this guy's not allowed to shop without a mask, so we need to stop him. Look at how dumb this is. So how much you want to bet they don't do anything with that and they go put it right back on the shelves, right? Like, it just, there's so much inconsistency with this. But what's horrible is that this is being allowed. Now, think about how this will translate going forward 10, 20 years, right? The idea that we're now allowed to be physically accosted if we just simply do something that other people don't agree with. Not even a law, right? So next time you're in a position where you're simply protesting for civil rights or something, and they come out and just beat you into the ground and go, well, you're not allowed to be here. Recognize that we allowed this to come to this point. By the way, that's already happening anyway, but we see that you get the point. And here is the absurdity of where this has gone. This is how absurd this has truly gotten. Researchers in Mexico have made a nose-only COVID mask, which they say reduces the risk of infection while eating and talking. And take note how they don't show you how they set the mask on the table, because that's totally sanitary, right? Because it's totally not. And in fact, that's a direct violation of what we're told we're supposed to do. But who cares? It's just about compliance. Right. So explain for me how that makes any sense, right? Are you still breathing and talking? And okay. So the argument is by covering your nose, it lessens the spread. I mean, this is mindless. There's no scientific data that backs this up whatsoever. Well, I mean, I could even take that back. There's plenty of you know, computer models and observational things where they argue this is the case. But the real random controlled gold standard studies, peer reviewed, have shown you quite clearly that these things, whether nose, mask, anything, have not a statistically significant reduction in transmission. That is just really dumb. I mean, I can't even engage this intelligently. This is so incredibly stupid. It just makes my teeth hurt. It's like, how is anybody actually believing that this makes sense? Right, because it's not like stuff flies out of your mouth when you chew or anything, right? How often does stuff fly out of your nose when you're eating and chewing? I'd say less so than your mouth, but, you know, whatever. Oh, you just touched it. Now you got to change it, right? You got to change it. Oh, but the rules don't matter as long as you're wearing that thing. Oh, guess what? She just picked her mask up off the ground. That's totally okay, though. Yay, healthy stuff off the ground. Good times, right? Just comply, and you're a good citizen. Incredible. And as Mark puts it, this is getting like some sort of effing parody, and I agree. It is next level. The fact that people are actually doing this shows you how mindless and just how the real analogy of being sheep. But I argue it is not the majority. That's my opinion. I could be wrong, but I really don't believe it. This is as stupid as that mask that opens when you eat. This is simply about the idea that this is normalizing the idea of a constant covering, which has already shown psychologically and a lot of other ways to impact how you live your life. It stops you from talking. It stops you from speaking out. It makes you more compliant. These are historical facts, guys. But let's pretend like that has nothing to do with it, because we're crazy. We're all crazy, right? But we'll leave it there. I just hope more than ever, and I do believe this, I truly feel that it's happening, that people see this, that it's become so absurd that people are truly beginning to recognize on all sorts of levels. That's why I showed you those tweets the other day. There are people that disagree on that think masks work in every possible way. There are people that think vaccines are the best thing you could possibly put in your body, but they are also arguing that this vaccine is dangerous, or that the lockdowns are killing people. Right. So what you need to recognize is that at the end of the day, there are people on all walks of life here. There are Republicans, there are Democrats, there are people that recognize how the two-party illusion is fake, that all see that this thing is alarming, that what they're doing is not really about health anymore and never really was. So as they continue to scream about the fringe, weird conspiracy theory, anti-science YouTubers, or whatever they're trying to make it out to be, it continues to be patently absurd. And every day it goes forward, it gets more and more obvious of how dumb that statement is. With PhDs, Nobel laureates, and entire regulatory agencies of other countries, it's pathetic that they're still holding on to that. But this is why we get censored, right? It's a badge of honor, guys. We are being censored for literally doing what they're afraid to do. So thank you. Thank you all for making this possible. This wouldn't exist without all of your support. You know, and I'm actually really proud of this model. I'm not the first person to do this, but I think we're the first outlet to really make it to show how feasible this is. We don't need advertisers. We don't need corporate interests. We don't need major backers. What we need is people like you who care. That's it. And what they want you to believe is that if you care, you should support the government. But what we're recognizing quite quickly is that the government doesn't care. And what they're doing is using your emotions and your caring to manipulate what happens. So if you care enough about the truth and about what we're doing here, continue to support this channel or other channels as well. And what I'm hoping is that other platforms begin to recognize that we don't need to sell our souls to continue to fight for the truth. All we need to do is find people that care. And I truly argue that is the vast majority. As Caitlin Johnstone points out, the government wouldn't pretend to be good if we didn't want good. So thank you for being here and continuing to fight for these things. I swear we are making a difference, and I see it every day. And on that note, remember to focus on those things. Focus on what we're doing. Focus on what we see changing and continue to fight for it. Do not get bogged down in the media's perception about how bad we're losing or about how this is going to happen no matter what or about how you're the fringe crazy one. Don't get bogged down in what they're telling you is the majority. Recognize that every single day we are seeing more people. Every single day we're getting more emails and more funding and more everything despite all the censorship. I think we're winning. In any case, can't hurt to feel that way. So thank you for being here. I love you guys. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.